sight, sound, smell or touch the something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard. And they use them to help us to find.
Take a ride from the high desert and the great American Southwest, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio. This is Dark Matter with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Oh, thank God. I'm finally on. Hi, everybody. This is Dark Matter. It's a brand new program. There will be listeners from Sirius XM, new ones, and they're probably going, what's this all about? And then there's going to be my group that's probably come over from terrestrial radio. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Extra Terrestrial Radio. This is going to be fun. It's strange because before the show began, and for days, or maybe weeks now, I've been sweating it, really sweating it. But just before the program tonight, an hour before, I began, you know, pacing back and forth, sweat breaking out on my forehead, sweat breaking out all over me. But just before it began, I just played some music that I love. You know, I'm a music nut, as most of you know. And a strange kind of calm descended on me. And so now I'm calm. Now, I've got something I've got to do. Tonight, we're going to have Michio Kaku, Professor Kaku, on. He is probably America's premier theoretical physicist, and it's really, really, really interesting stuff. I'm sure a lot of you have seen Michio on TV, various science shows. In fact, actually, he's all over TV. We're going to talk to him about that. But there's something I've got to do at the beginning of the show, and I promised my listeners I would do this. So some of you here on SiriusXM may not digest this very well, but it won't be long, and then we'll begin the regular show. Yeah, here I am back. And, of course, the question is, everybody who's wanted to interview me is, why are you back? Why? And so I'm here tonight to answer that. But to answer it, I need to relate a little bit of history. Something I've never talked about. Something I've wanted to talk about for years now. So a little history. I've been called a serial retiree, and some of it is a, you know, fair rap. There were short periods where I left broadcasting because of the events that occurred to my family and my life. My son was attacked. There were false allegations that were made about me. Then I had to take legal action over it. My wife of 16 years, dear Ramona, died unexpectedly. These sorts of things that come along in life, they're big things too, would stop most people, I think, in their tracks, and they stop me. In each case, though, I did return to broadcasting as soon as I could. In some cases, you know, like the my son and so forth and so on, it was a matter of days before I got back. There was one long period of time when I was gone, and this is the one that I have never talked about, and I'm going to tonight. That was 9 months to a year, somewhere in there, that I was gone. And that fairly is a retirement. The reason for it is the reason for my falling out with Premier Radio and Clear Channel. For years now, I've held something inside of me that to move forward, I'm going to have to get out. So here it comes. I've got a lot of anger, institutional hatred, actually, for Premier Radio, that if anything has grown in recent weeks and days. So tonight, I guess I want to tell you why and clear the air, and then I'll be done with it. Back in 98, my son was sexually assaulted by his high school teacher, who was HIV positive. That man is now serving a prison sentence for that attack, and my son to this day suffers deep scars, which have never healed and never may. Thank God, of course, he's not HIV positive or has AIDS or anything like that. Anyway, while trying to deal with all of that, a couple of radio hosts went on international radio and said there was a secret sealed indictment here in Pahrump, Nevada, charging me, Art Bell, with child molestation. My God. A more horrible thing I can't imagine. It's right on up there with murder. Maybe worse. Right? I think murderers are treated better in prison. So it's really an awful allegation. Then others began repeating it, and worse. To be very, very clear, and I want to be, there was an indictment. Not naming me, oh no, but of course, the teacher who had attacked my son. Well, I immediately contacted Premier Radio and requested their legal help in defending my reputation as well as that of the companies, right? It's their reputation that's on the line too, wouldn't you think? Anyway. At the time, my show was clearing, I think, more affiliates than Rush Limbaugh's. Not more, I'm sorry. More than anybody save Rush Limbaugh. So I assumed that the company would leap to our collective defense. I mean, that's a horrible allegation, right? Boy, was I wrong. I had gone to the top management for help. I received a memo shortly thereafter, which I'm sure they didn't intend for me to get, but I got it. I've still got it. It was from a manager at Premier to another manager, actually vice president, that said in part, get this, it was a worthless lawsuit, and besides, Premier had not been defamed. I went nuts. To me, then and now, it's totally beyond incredible that any company could not act to protect one of their big assets, their host, and their own reputation. How could it be? How could it be? I just seethed about it inside for years and until now that they could let me, you know, sort of slowly twist in the wind like that. Some of it's really hard to put into words. It affected me so heavily. Of course, I pursued the legal case myself, my own cost. And then, in 2000, not quite yet through the legal case, you know, I said to them, bye. You know, I'm just not dealing with this buy. And that's why I left. Well, finally, after a long absence, the show, I guess, was in some distress. It had lost affiliates. And so the president of Premier Radio at that time, as well as the CEO of Clear Channel, the big guy himself, both came a call and they sat on my couch. And they said, we want you back. Name your price. Now, bear in mind, these are two guys who could have, stepped in and said, you know, forget this memo, forget this lawyer. We're going to back this guy up and ourselves at the same time. They could have, but they didn't. So I think I may have initially suggested that they do some sort of procreation calisthenics with each other or something. I said, look, you know, if name your price. I said, you don't have enough money. I said things that can't be repeated here. And well, actually on SiriusXM they could, but we're not doing that on this show, by the way. We'll get to that here in a minute. So they sat there and said, well, look, we screwed up big time. We're prepared to pay your legal costs. And then I said more things that shouldn't be repeated that amounted to hell no, you know, no way. Finally, though, you know, after some days of reflection, I relented for a good reason. I had a contract with them, and I had a non-compete, which means I couldn't go back on the air, and I wanted to get back on the air. That's what I do all this for, is to, you know, is to have fun, to be on the air. And so with a non-compete, well, you know, if I didn't go back to them, I didn't go back. So I finally came up with my price. My price was that they drop 4 minutes of commercial time every single hour. Well, they met my price. So I went back because it was the only thing I could do. You know, I wanted that. I wanted my show. So there you have it. Oh, and by the way, that decision, if anybody ever says to you, name your price, do it. That's what I would say, because in retrospect, my price, though it was good for the show, genuinely good for the show, you know, they put those commercials back when I was gone, when I left, they put the commercials back plus plus. So I should have named my price and it should have been a high one, but there you have it. The story of my big retirement. And I think Premier's monumental lack of support. So, you know, I needed to get all of that off my chest and out of my gut. That's it. There's lots of good reasons, though, that I am back. I love radio. I mean, I really love it. I've been in radio all my life. Began with ham radio. Went to rock and roll radio. Spent a lot of years there. Talk radio. You name it, radio. That's all I've ever done, so that's all I know, and that's why I'm here. Now, I've got a very wonderful wife right now. By the way, not 13 years of age, as the internet seems to suggest, but 29, be 30 March 1st, who's very, very supportive. That's Erin, my wife now of 7 years. We've got a wonderful 6-year-old, proud to be in the first grade, daughter named Asia. So, Erin and Asia now get up early at about 6 in the morning for school every day. Well, I'm a nocturnal being, and I've been one all my life. I can't do that. So here I am with a stable, happy family. I get a message on Facebook from a guy named Jeremy Coleman. And that was pretty cool because he had to pay $5 because I've got 5,000 members on Facebook. So he had to pay $5. And I called him and he said, you know, why don't you come to, and I've had terrestrial offers all over the place. A couple of really big ones, turned them down. But here is Jeremy saying, come to SiriusXM and just have fun. Do, you know, like three hours, 4 days a week and just do what you want. Have fun. That was it. I'm like an old radio pirate. That was too much for me. So I rounded up some old buddies, Keith Rowland. Did ArtBell.com way back when. Keith Rowland's doing ArtBell.com now. In fact, if you don't believe it, go over there and take a look. ArtBell.com. You've got a good reason to go over there because we've got something called the wormhole. No, not Fast Blast. That was yesterday. Today, with a name like Dark Matter, the way you can send a message to me is pretty cool. You can do it by going to artbell.com, look for the wormhole, and then if you have a question for me, a comment for me, or my guest, the wormhole will digest it in Arizona, where the website is. It will come whizzing all the way over here to Nevada and appear magically on my screen. And you don't have to be any special kind of anything to use the wormhole. You can all use it. So how many of you guessed what my bumper music theme would be? Everybody was trying. Ride My Seesaw was such an obvious choice. Want to take a ride, right? And a ride is what it's going to be. This is going to be an awful lot of fun. Anyway, here I am on Sirius XM. There's no rules, folks. Oh, well, there's one. No bad language. Now, I know to the Sirius XM crowd, that may seem, you know, like anti-Fourth Amendment or something. I don't know. But we don't need bad language here to do what we do. And besides, we serve up an audience that's somewhere between, you know, 12 and 80, maybe more. So there's no point in antagonizing them with bad language, and there's no need, you know, because you can convey information, surprise, shock, whatever, without resorting to bad language. We never did, and I wouldn't want it now. So no bad language. Restrain thyself. Now, I did, and oh, by the way, when we do open lines, they are going to be unscreened open lines, right? Unscreened. That means you just let it ring, and I'll pick it up. Now, don't call right now because I'm not ready for calls, but when we do open lines, they're going to be unscreened. We have a guest? Yes, we'll screen just to the degree that we'll make sure you have a relevant question for the guest, but otherwise, Otherwise, we'll not screen. Let's see, anything. Oh, politics. I said we wouldn't talk about politics, but, you know, it'll sneak in a little bit. There's no way to avoid it. If you talk about global warming or cooling is the latest news, you know, it's going to get a little political. I mean, some topics just, you can't avoid it. That's all there is to it. So there'll be a little bit of that, but I have interests that lie in other areas. You know, science, the paranormal, our very existence, stuff like that. So, we're about to get underway. I think, it seems to me, there's something else I wanted to tell you, and it's skipping my mind right now. So, that's kind of it. A little bit of politics, only when it relates. Oh, I know what it was. Last night, I was sitting in this studio, listening to whoever was on around like midnight or 1 a.m., and it was hilarious. Because it was one talk host talking to another. And he was saying, you know, are you going to listen tomorrow night? You know, this guy talks about aliens. Are you going to listen to that? Of course, we talk about much more than aliens, but they come up. And they were joking about it and having a good old time at my expense. And so I sat and listened. You know, it kind of piqued my interest, so I sat and listened a little bit. And I guess I listened for an hour because they started taking calls. They tried to go off to some other topic, you know, but they began taking calls on whatever show this was. And every single call was about aliens. Totally cracked me up. I mean, here they were having a few jokes at my expense. Hey, he's coming on tomorrow night. He's going to talk about aliens. Why don't they just float down? I heard. And then they began going to the phones, and every single call was about aliens. And I think I may have heard a crack toward the end of it. Well, maybe we ought to be talking about aliens. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break here. My old friends at Sea Crane are back, the Sea Crane Company with the best electronics the world has ever seen. And here comes the first one tonight. It's the Super USB Wi-Fi Antenna 3. Now, we live in a Wi-Fi world now. Everybody's got it, right? And by the way, if you've got a, if you've got Wi-Fi, then you might want to make really sure that you get everything, you know, like your router, as high as you can, because you get a better signal that way. And then they make antennas, too, to make your router a little stronger. But, I mean, if you want good Wi-Fi, I've got a product here that, man, you've got to have. It's only $99.95. And wait a minute, I'm supposed to give the price at the end, right? But it's worth every penny. It's the Super USB Wi-Fi Antenna 3. You plug it into your computer via the USB port, right? Load a little software, and now you have this incredible super-duper receiver that will receive internet from, believe me, far, far away. In fact, if you're a trucker, do me a favor and ask another trucker by CB if they've got the USB Wi-Fi antenna from C-Crane. If they do, they'll give you the recommendation. I don't care what kind of truck stop you're at, or, you know, if you're near a Starbucks or whatever with Wi-Fi, this thing will pull it in like two or three times further than your laptop's natural Wi-Fi connection. This thing is incredible. It's kind of skinny. It's got a couple of suction cups on it. So you can put it, for example, if you're in a truck, you can put it on the window. If you're in an apartment, you can put it on your window. I was in Manila. I got three other services. When I plugged in the USB Wi-Fi antenna, I got like 82. And this thing is awesome. So, $99.95. You can see it at ccrane.com. And better yet, you can order it right now at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863, the C. Crane Company. They make the wildest, best electronics in the world. Short break, and we'll be right back.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
XM, baby, and we're very serious. To call Art Bell, please manipulate your communication device and call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
All right, a little note about those phone numbers. All right, we're not ready to take calls. Do not call now. Do not call now. And the reason is, if you do, it'll only ring 20 times, and then we'll hang up on you. And that will probably frustrate you and make you angry. So that's it. I'm watching the lines. Hang up and wait. We're going to interview Dr. Kaku, and then at some point, if he so desires, we will take calls. And then if he's only here for, you know, 2.5 hours, then we'll take an hour of open lines on the screen. All right. Let's do it. Dr. Michio Kaku is an internationally recognized authority in theoretical physics and the environment. He holds the Henry Summit Professorship in Theoretical Physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. That's quite a sentence. He has lectured around the world, and his PhD-level textbooks are actually required reading at many of the top physics labs. Dr. Kaku graduated from Harvard in 1968, summa cum laude, number one in his physics class. No surprise, huh? Received his PhD from the University of California at Berkeley Radiation Lab in 1972. There's a place for you. that there are stories. He held a lectureship at Princeton University in 1973, joined the faculty at the City University of New York, where he has been a professor of theoretical physics now for 25 years. His goal is to help complete Einstein's dream of a theory of everything, a single equation, he likes to say, no bigger perhaps than your thumb, which would unify all the fundamental forces in the universe. Dr. Kaku, welcome.
Welcome. Well, I'm glad to be on your show, Art. It's been a while, huh?
That's great to hear that voice. It's been a very long while, yes, sir. And it's been so many years, Professor, that do you remember I said, you're going to be the next Carl Sagan?
Well, I remember, yes. I remember you said that.
Yeah,
and
well,
it wasn't so long ago.
Well, you are. You've achieved that. I can't turn on Discovery or any other science program and not see you.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a talent being able to explain the inexplicable, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there's so much to explain. Mm-hmm.
There really is. And I've got one off the top that I've been thinking about and I want to ask you about, all right?
Okay, fire away.
All right, let's start with the hard stuff. Where is it? All right, here we go. In quantum theory, mm-hmm. certain physical systems can become entangled, meaning their states are directly related to the state of another object somewhere else. When one object is measured and the Schrodinger wave function collapses into a single state, that's complicated, the other object collapses into its corresponding state no matter how far away the objects are. In other words, non-locality. Is that a fair description?
That's right. Einstein hated this concept, but hey, he was wrong on this one.
Oh, he was wrong?
We measure this effect in the laboratory all the time, that interactions are in fact non-local. Einstein thought that the universe was local. That is, all effects are transmitted to nearby objects, not objects over a distance instantaneously. But hey, what can I say? You know, we do this in the laboratory every day.
Okay. But nobody understands. What it comes down to is this, really, folks. If you think of two particles and you get them together and they're flipping and flopping, well, once they've come together, their flips and flops are going to be exactly the same. It doesn't matter if one's in New York and one's in Moscow. Is that correct, Doctor?
That's right. If you take two electrons and bring them together so they vibrate in unison, and then you separate them, an invisible umbilical cord connects them no matter how far they are separated. You can separate them to the ends of the galaxy, and you vibrate one, and in some sense the other one is aware of the fact that it's attached to an object on the other side of the galaxy. Amazing.
More than amazing. I think Einstein said spooky something at a distance.
Yeah, spooky action at a distance, said Einstein.
Okay, but it's not possible. I mean, without communication of A and B, how would they know to flip it and flop at exactly the same point? They're doing a dance together, but they're not communicating.
Well, in some sense, they are. Electrons spin up and down. So if you know that one electron is spin up, then its partner is going to be spin down. But if you separate them and you measure the spin of one electron and it's down, then instantly, faster than the speed of light, you now know that an object on the other side of the galaxy is spin up, which is amazing. It's astounding.
It's amazing and astounding, but Professor, I'm a ham radio operator, and I can transmit 1,500 watts through a very effective antenna from here to Moscow, let's say, and I'm going sublight, not light speed, but sublight, a little bit. And so there is communication, but it takes me a big transmitter, a giant antenna, and I may or may not be heard in Moscow. My point is, how are they talking?
Well, we don't know. We just know that spin is conserved, so that if one electron has spin up, the other one has spin down, so the total sum is zero, But if you separate them, the memory of them being attached stays with them, even though you separate them over light years. And if you measure one being spin up, the other one is automatically spin down. And you now know that faster than the speed of light. Now, Einstein, of course, hated that idea, going faster than the speed of light. But we do this in the laboratory. Now, there is a catch, however. Einstein, in some sense, has the last laugh. It turns out that the information you send across this process is random information. That is, you cannot send Morse code this way. But in some sense, everything is entangled. Every atom of your body, in some sense, is entangled with another atom on the other side of the galaxy. Which
okay,
is amazing if you think about it.
It is, but the bottom line is still we don't fully understand it at all, right?
Right. And however, quantum teleportation, a la Star Trek, is a direct consequence of this effect. And this has now been demonstrated at the University of Austria, also Caltech, University of Maryland, many places. And quantum teleportation, a la Star Trek, that is teleporting Captain Kirk from one place to another, may eventually be possible. We already teleport atoms now. Individual atoms can also be connected using this method of entanglement so that, the atom here can exchange information to another atom on the other side of the galaxy.
So we can teleport atoms, yes?
Yes, we teleported photons. The world's record is, I think, 600 meters for teleporting photons. And we now can teleport atoms, cesium atoms, rubidium atoms. This is now something that we do in the laboratory.
Okay, well, let me just wait until they've really got it down before I volunteer for an entire body move. Here's what I wanted to ask you, the build-up to all this. Here's where it is, and this is going to take you out of your comfort zone a little bit. But, boy, I was sitting here thinking about all of this, the quantum story you just told, and then I thought about twins. You know, people who were twins. You know, I've been off on this for years now, this consciousness kick.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Professor, consciousness may have a quantum link. I know that's a terrible jump for you, but I have this feeling, and my example would be twins. Sometimes you've got a twin on one side of the world feeling pain when the other side of the twin on the other side of the world has something awful happen to it. And I've just got this funny feeling there's a quantum connection. What say you?
Well, you know, some of the greatest minds of quantum mechanics, like Eugene Wigner, winner of the Nobel Prize, he helped to build the atomic bomb. He believed that the quantum theory proved that there has to be a cosmic consciousness. And the reason for that is as follows. When you do this measurement, you don't know whether an object is spin up or spin down until you look at it.
Right.
So the observation process, in some sense, determines its state. And this means that since observation requires consciousness, only conscious beings can make measurements, we think, right? This means that consciousness is required to make an observation. And this goes back to what is called the Schrodinger cat problem,
yes,
where if I put a cat in a box and I attach a gun to the cat so the gun can kill the cat, is the cat dead or alive? Well, before you open the box, we physicists have to add the wave function of a dead cat to the wave function of a live cat. The cat is neither dead nor alive. When you open the box, then you say, aha, the cat is alive.
Mm.
So this means that observation that is opening the box, in some sense, determined that the cat was alive.
I follow everything up to the point where you said it determined.
Right. In other words, we don't know whether the cat is dead or alive until you open the box and make an observation. Before that,
right,
it's in Never Never Land. It's in a mixture of two states.
Right.
Now,
but how did your observation determine which it was?
Well, the state can either be alive or dead before you open the box.
Right.
When you open the box, the so-called wave function collapses. So it then degenerates into a live cat or a dead cat. Before,
yes,
it has a choice. Once you open the box, it's either dead or alive. So the observation process determined the fact that it exists in a certain state. So even though this sounds bizarre, this is the way electrons work, and that's why we have laser beams. laser beams are a direct consequence of this. You know, why are laser beams so bizarre and so strange? It's precisely because the laser beam is a quantum effect.
All right, but I hate this, but I still don't get how my opening the box and observing that the cat was alive
mm-hmm.
helped the cat be alive. It's a 50-50 prop. It could have been dead, too, right? And I observed
right.
that.
That's right. It could have been dead as well. But the fact that when you open the box, you now know the state of the cat, okay, that means that observation collapsed the wave. So the wave is no longer oscillating between being dead and alive. The wave
That's
has
true.
To choose. The wave has to choose whether the cat is dead or alive.
Well, that would be the wave choosing, not me.
Yeah, we don't choose ahead of time the fact that the cat is alive.
Oh,
we
okay.
don't choose. It's the observation
okay.
process that chooses it. So by opening the box, you now know the cat is, let's say, alive. We can't choose that it's alive. It's a 50-50 either alive or dead.
Okay, now I get it.
Right. And this works for electrons, and it works for transistors, and that's why your laptop works. You know, why is it that transistors and laptops are so miraculous and do so many crazy things? It's precisely because of this effect. If quantum mechanics were turned off, lasers would no longer work. The satellites we have in outer space wouldn't work. The internet would collapse. All modern electronics would grind to a halt if the quantum mechanical interpretation is turned off. So we live the quantum theory every single second you're online.
Wow. Okay. All right. Let's change gears. I'm sorry. I just had to ask about that. And there's one other thing. Remember,
yeah.
we've got a big new audience here. We're on Sirius XM. So if you would run through the various types of civilizations that I know you measure, or it's a way of measuring, I guess. Again, we are, before we even begin, we remain, I take it, a type zero.
That's right. We physicists like to measure everything in terms of energy. That's how we quantify things, including civilizations in outer space. So if you look at outer space, there must be three types of civilizations, type 1, type 2, type 3, depending upon energy output. Eventually, a civilization becomes planetary. They control the oceans. They mine they can mine the earth. They can mine the oceans. They control the weather. So they control all planetary energy like volcanoes and earthquakes. That's type 1. Type 2 is they've exhausted the power of a planet, and they start to mobilize the power of a star. They play with stars like Star Trek. The Federation of Planets would be a very typical type 2 civilization where they've colonized just a few star systems. Then eventually you exhaust the power of a star and you go to the galaxy. That's type 3, where you roam the galactic space lanes like the Empire of Empire Strikes Back. So we have planets, stars, and galaxies. But recently I was speaking in London, and a little kid comes up to me and he says, "Professor, you're wrong. There's got to be type 4. And I said, "Well, you're crazy. There's no such thing as type 4. There are only planets, stars, and galaxies." And he said, "No, there's type 4, the power of the continuum." And then I realized, yeah, there is something beyond galactic power, and that's dark energy. And that's the continuum. That's the power of the Q. And I realized, oh, my God, there really is an extragalactic source of energy out there, dark energy, which actually makes up about 73% of the universe's energy.
So and dark matter?
Yeah, well, dark matter is in there. And now on this scale, what are we on this scale? We are type zero. We get our energy from dead plants, oil and coal, right?
But we do deserve to call ourselves a civilization, yes?
Yes, we are type zero. And we're about 100 years from being type one. If you just get a calculator and calculate the energy output of the Earth, we're about a zero in about 100 years will be type one. So we are now making the historic transition to type 1. So what is the Internet? The Internet is a type 1 telephone system. We're privileged to be alive to see the birth of a beginning of a type 1 technology called the Internet. The language that these people will speak, well, today, the two dominant languages of the Internet are English and Mandarin. So we are already beginning to see a type 1 language. Soccer and the Olympics is beginning with type 1 sports. The European Union, NAFTA, we see the beginning of a type 1 economy.
Quick question. Do you think that in 100 years, English will still be part of a type 1 civilization?
Probably be the dominant language. Everywhere I go around the world, people speak English to each other. I could go to Vietnam and see Chinese, Vietnamese, and Laotian physicists, and they all speak English to each other because there's no common language in Asia other than English. And the same thing in Europe. You can go to a conference in Europe among scientists, and they all speak English. Business, finance, arts, everyone speaks English.
Okay, that's comforting. We'll be here, or at least our language will.
That's right. And the question is whether or not we're going to be here. That's the big question, Mark.
Actually, you know, in the old days when I interviewed you about this, I asked you about the odds of either A, being destroyed as a type zero, or B, making it to type one and, you know, popping the corks on champagne. But I don't know. I've got this feeling that you probably haven't changed your mind. What are the odds that we make it successfully to type one without destroying ourselves?
Well, this is the most historic transition in the history of our civilization, the transition from type zero to type one. And it's not guaranteed that we're going to make it. Because we have global warming, nuclear proliferation, the spread of biogerms, we have threats we create ourselves. And so it's not clear. However, I'd say 50-50 now. I'm a little bit more optimistic than I was when I first talked to you.
I should say. That's a big change.
Yeah,
that makes me feel better. I feel a lot better now.
Yeah, no, I think 50-50 that you know, we have a fighting chance that, we'll make it to type 1.
Okay, look, it wasn't that long ago that we spoke. Now, between then and now, what's encouraged you?
Well, you know, the economy collapsed.
It did.
And we hit rock bottom. But it hey, you know, we're still here, right?
Appear to be.
Yeah. And, you know, we were in denial about so many of these problems back then. But now, you know, they dominate the headlines, you know, global warming and, you know, nuclear proliferation, stuff like that. People are beginning to get aware of some of these things. And so I think that that's going to be good. And, you know, democracy is spreading because of the Internet. Look at Arab Spring and look at the spread of democracy because of the Internet. And democracies do not war with other democracies. You know, think of every war that you've learned since you were in grade school. And they've always been between kings, queens, emperors, and dictators, but never between two democracies. And so as the Internet spreads democracies, democracies don't war with other democracies. And so I think we will have wars in the future, but they're going to be less wars, less ferocious, and less common as the spread of democracy takes hold. The big loser in all this, I think, are dictatorships. Dictatorships thrive on the ignorance of their own people. And I think, you know, to be a dictator is to be an endangered species.
I would have to agree. I mean, recent history certainly proves that, right? So
yeah,
yes.
That's what the glimmer of hope. I'm not quite as pessimistic as I was before. I see the spread of democracy. People are becoming more aware of these problems. And democracies debate these problems. And they confront them. And they don't war with each other.
That's optimism, all right. By the way, what about the little trips that we've had along the way? I mean, you know, big earthquakes, nuclear reactors going bonkers.
Yeah, well, it's not clear that we are going to make it. I mean, look at Fukushima, right? That's a disaster that no one predicted. Three simultaneous meltdowns. You realize that the core at the Fukushima liquefied? We've never seen liquefaction of a nuclear reactor core before.
Actually, I think it was three of them, right?
Three of them, right. Three liquefactions of molten uranium. And you realize that we still have not controlled it. They could spiral out of control any day. A small little earthquake, and the reactor accident starts up all over again.
Professor, hold tight right there. I'm going to hold you right there for a second and talk about one other C-Crane product. This is it. We have like two breaks in an hour or something like that. This is a Sentinel Ally. And boy, it is your friend. It is your ally. It's really hard to describe. This baby is about, I don't know, about 14 inches, I would guess, long. It's sort of round. It's a stereo portable speaker, ladies and gentlemen, and you can connect it to your cell phone. You can pair it to your cell phone, and when you do, you can play the tunes on your cell phone, and they come out sounding like a symphony orchestra. I mean, really excellent stereo, loud, too. Now, the Sentinel is rechargeable. It accepts Bluetooth, USB thumb drive, an SD card, an 8-inch patch cord, if you want to go that old way. And it's got a built-in FM radio. This is like everything in a little, well, put it this way. When it was demonstrated to me by Bob Crane a few months ago when I was up visiting him, I went, I've got to have one. And then I've shown it to other people, and they have all gone, I've got to have one. Go to ccrane.com and look at it. You've got to see it for yourself. You can use it, for example, have it in the kitchen, have your cell phone in the living room. It's great for barbecues. You can take it anywhere you want, out to the lake, your kitchen counter, anywhere. Doesn't matter. Fantastic stereo sound compared to what otherwise comes out of a cell phone, which is tinny and, well, you know. How much? Always an important question. $69.95 on sale right now. Call C. Crane right now. They have operators sitting by. They don't stand. They sit. I would, too, if I was an operator. 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. The C. Crane Company. They make the best electronics in the world. I'm Art Bell, and you're listening to Dark Matter.
Dark Matter. To call the show, please dial 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Boy, it's good to be back. It's great to be back. My guest is Professor Michio Kaku. I think our nation's premier physics explainer. Also, the co-discoverer of string theory. Just so you know, the amount of weight you're in the presence of. Good morning, afternoon, evening. Dark Matter in progress. I'm Art Bell. I want to note the passing of a friend, Wayne Green. He's a ham radio guy, the originator of 73 Magazine, so much more in electronics. Passed, I think, on the 14th. Take care, buddy. See you eventually. Dark Matter, the premier broadcast underway right now. My guest, Dr. Michio Kaku, and we're back, Professor. Before Fukushima, what are the possibilities, both, you know, good and bad?
Well, you know, nuclear energy had so much promise decades ago. Many futurists predicted that by the year 2000, we would have 1,000 reactors and 1,000 breeder reactors in the United States. Right. Now we're lucky to just have 100 ordinary reactors, and we have zero breeder reactors. So there's been a collapse of nuclear energy in the United States. However, in Japan, we have something even worse. Right now, we have this raging meltdown that's in a temporary stasis. Right now, every single nuclear power plant in Japan is shut down. Every single one. Zero energy output from nuclear energy right now.
Wow.
So it's causing a national crisis. You know, that's the third largest economy on the planet. And all of a sudden, one of their main sources of energy is shut off. So it's caused a tremendous amount of disruption. And the cleanup will take about 40 years. 40 years. Chernobyl, by the way, back in 1986, it's still going on. You realize the core is still melting its way through the earth in outside Kiev. And that's been, 25 years in the making. So it'll take about 40 years to clean up the Fukushima disaster.
All right. On behalf of my wife and others, I want to ask this. When Fukushima happened, I was in the Philippines. You know, and we were worried to death. Oh, the radiation's going to come this way. Of course, it went toward the U.S. instead, because that's where the prevailing winds, I guess, take it. Now, here's my question. They're pouring all of this water on the reactors to keep them from further, I guess, meltdown. And this water is running off. They're trying to capture it as best they can. But they're not doing a really good job. A lot of it's leaking into the Pacific Ocean.
That's yes? right. TEPCO, the utility, has now admitted that they bungled the cleanup operation. 300 tons worth of radioactive water, we think, have spilled into the outside environment and probably into the Pacific Ocean. The Korean government is now threatening not to purchase any more fish from Japan because of this crisis. This is going to escalate as a consequence of this. And TEPCO, unfortunately, is sort of like, you know, the three stooges operating a nuclear power plant. Mo, Larry, and Curly chasing each other around the control room, hitting each other over the head. We have a bunch of incompetents running that nuclear power plant. I think that eventually the government's going to have to take over and do what Gorbachev did back in 1986, and that is call out the military. It was a military operation that finally got the Chernobyl under control. And I think the Japanese government may have to do something similar, admit that the utility is totally outclassed, outgunned, and they should perhaps bring in the military.
Wow. Self-defense forces or U.S. military?
Self-defense forces. You realize
can
that
they handle
Chernobyl,
it?
A quarter of a million people were involved in that cleanup operation. A quarter of a million people. It was the largest engineering feat of its type ever.
And a lot of them died. A lot of them died, too, right?
The initial, the firemen and the initial emergency crews, yeah, they died a horrible, horrible death. You know, skin falling off, hair falling off. They had a lethal dose of radiation in the initial day of the Chernobyl accident, yeah.
So is that what they're facing in Japan? I mean, are there some jobs that are so damn dangerous that if they start a real cleanup and send in the military, there's going to be people that will not live through the experience?
Well, at Chernobyl, many people were sent in just for a few minutes, minutes to do these very important tasks. Robots, for example, cannot do these tasks. No matter how many science fiction movies we've seen with robots in them, robots can barely turn a screwdriver. And so robots have been a total failure at Fukushima. And as a consequence, the Pentagon, the U.S. Pentagon, has now set up a crash program to develop robots that can actually turn screws and turn valves. And
robots have been a giant failure worldwide anyway. I mean, when I was a kid, we all thought, oh, man, robots will be doing the dishes and cleaning the rugs and everything else by the time we're grown up.
Yeah, no, robots have the intelligence of an insect, like a cockroach, a retarded, lobotomized cockroach. They're very slow, the robots we have in MIT. Okay, and, you know, you put them inside Chernobyl, and all they do is get lost.
Can I stop you for 1 second and ask why? Why have we not made more strides in robotics?
We made a mistake 50 years ago. We thought that the brain is a computer. But you see, the brain is not a digital computer. There's no Windows. There's no Pentium chip. There's no software. There's no programming. There's no subroutines. The brain is not a digital computer. It's a learning machine. It's called a neural network. It learns, and it changes itself after it learns, right? Now, your laptop today is just as stupid as it was yesterday. because laptops never change. They never learn anything. And that's the difference between a digital computer robot and a human brain. The brain does one thing, learn, okay? It doesn't
right.
compute. It doesn't add. It doesn't subtract like what ordinary robots do. Robots.
My Windows 7 does not learn.
Right. And, you know, robots are adding machines, very sophisticated. So it gives you the appearance that it's thinking, but it's actually not thinking at all. It's just
right,
adding.
Right.
While we are learning machines. And that's why at Fukushima, we have robots that can't even turn a screwdriver. It's that bad.
So they're no good. So are people going to lose their lives trying to get Fukushima under control eventually? Is that what it comes to?
I hope it doesn't happen that way. But, you know, if they do what the Russians did, they'll order, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to go in just for a few minutes apiece and turn the screws and open the valves and begin the cleanup operation. Mm-hmm. You realize they keep dumping cold water on the reactor and it flows out because the loop is not closed. It's an open loop.
I know.
Until they close the loop, they're going to dump more water and create more radioactive water as a consequence.
All right. All right. What about the fish? What about the sea life? What about the ocean? You're an environmentalist as well as everything else. So how bad is it?
Well, that's what we're fearful of. You know, cesium, strontium, and iodine occur in water-soluble form, and they will eventually wind up into the food chain. In fact, even in Tokyo, some housewives bring Geiger counters when they go shopping. There are hot spots outside the evacuation zone of Fukushima, you know, because it rains and the radiation was distributed unevenly. There are hot spots. And as you get closer to Fukushima, they're dead zones, you know, areas that, just like at Chernobyl, will be off limits for centuries to come. And it does mean that we have to inspect the fish because strontium, iodine, cesium will accumulate in muscle tissue and different kinds of organs of the fish. So it is something that has to be monitored. So far, so good. So far, there has been no major dumping of radioactive waste. But, hey, it could happen. It's seeping slowly. But so far, we have not yet seen a catastrophic breach of the water.
Okay. Professor, if you were a one-man committee in charge of deciding what the world needs to do with nuclear power and nuclear power plants and where we go as a world from here for energy, what would your advice to the world be with respect to nuclear power?
Well, I think every country has to decide for itself, but the Germans have decided and they've thrown in the towel. Nuclear power is going to be phased out in Germany. Also, Switzerland, they both have phased out nuclear energy. Italy is teetering. Japan, every poll shows that the people do not want nuclear. But, of course, something has to replace it, right?
Yes,
and right now, there's no single white knight. We would like to go with solar and renewable technology and clean technology. But solar is more expensive, and we're going to have to reduce the cost of solar. Now, further down the line, I think maybe within 5 to 10 years, in that framework, solar power gets cheaper and cheaper and slowly becomes more competitive with oil and coal. But on a 10-year time frame, fusion becomes possible. The French are bidding the store on the ITER fusion reactor that will hopefully go online in 10 years or so.
It'll be safe?
Well, we don't know because we've never had an operating fusion reactor before, but fusion reactors do not melt down. Meltdowns are caused by nuclear waste. The heat emitted from nuclear waste causes meltdowns. While fusion reactors...
Let me try this. Yes, if a fusion reactor goes wrong, what do we have?
Well, nothing, because it shuts itself off.
Good.
A fusion reactor has to attain what is called Lawson's criterion. Lawson's criterion, you have to have the right density, the right temperature to get fusion off the ground. The sun does it. Hydrogen bombs do it. And a fusion plant also has to attain Lawson's criterion. But if you have a leak, then the Lawson's criterion is no longer satisfied, and it shuts off. So the fusion plant basically shuts off. It doesn't melt like a conventional nuclear fission plant because it has no nuclear waste.
Dare I ask, so nothing can go wrong?
Well, there's always something that can go wrong, but not on the scale of fission. You know, fission reactors that use uranium are not found in nature. Mother Nature does not use uranium at all. Uranium is only found on the planet Earth for fission reactors. Mother Nature uses fusion, which is clean, recyclable. That's what Mother Nature uses, fusion.
Well, with Russia in mind, and before, before Fukushima, I was kind of a proponent of nuclear energy, and I think, if you'll excuse the expression, it was beginning to gather steam again until Fukushima. But right now, I think most people are probably going to say no, thank you, which means we better get moving on something else, eh?
Yeah, I think so. I think we should start to look at other forms of energy. I think for the next 10 years, there's going to be a flux. No one single white knight is going to emerge in the next 10 years. Right now, fossil fuels are as cheap as they've been because of, shale and fracking. So that's given some industrial nations breathing space. But I think that eventually, in a 10-year time frame, renewables, solar, hydrogen, will become competitive with fossil fuels. And again, 10 years from now, fusion starts to be in the mix. And so I think in the next 10 years, we're going to see chaos. The atmosphere is going to get worse with global warming. We're going to dump more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But in a 10-plus year time frame, there's some good news in the sense that renewable technology becomes cheaper and fusion becomes a possibility in that time frame.
Is fracking safe?
Well, so far, so good. You know, so far, we hadn't had a major disaster with regards to fracking, which requires, of course, fracturing some of the strata deep underneath the ground. However, you know, maybe the worst-case scenario will be fulfilled at some point. You know, when oil was discovered, no one thought we would have gigantic supertankers that would spring a leak and pollute huge chunks of the coastline, right?
Right.
So we definitely could have another disaster with fracking, but so far, so good.
Okay. We haven't even talked about the stuff you came on the air to talk about yet. So let's do that.
Well, I love to talk about anything with you.
I do too. Exoplanets, my goodness, in just the short years that we have not talked, they have discovered so many planets that are kind of like Earth, huh?
Yeah.
It's amazing how many of them.
That's right. Well, two a week. Right.
Oh my God, two a week.
Yeah.
And that means somewhat Earth-like, yes?
Yeah, that's right. Last time we talked, you know, we were just hoping that we would be able to identify planets way out there orbiting other stars. Now we've identified 2,000 planets, and now we can take a census of the Milky Way galaxy. This is a first. We've never been able to do this before. We now realize that over 50% of all stars at night you see in the Milky Way have planets of some sort. Over 50% of all stars have planets. And of them, we think that maybe one out of every 200 has an Earth-like planet. That means in our own backyard, the Milky Way galaxy, with about 200 billion stars, we have about a billion Earth-like planets in our own backyard.
Billion.
This is astounding. You know?
It is astounding. And it begs the question, where the hell are they?
Yeah, well, that's the Fermi paradox. I have my own point of view. And that is, if they can visit us from these fantastic distances, right, hundreds and hundreds of light years, they're probably type 2, or more likely type 3. And, our galaxy could be teeming with information being exchanged by different type 3 civilizations, right? There could be a galactic empire. We could be in the middle of it. But
yeah, and we're ants. We're nothing but ants. Haven't even noticed we're here yet.
That's right. We could be in the middle. We could be in the middle of this intergalactic communication network, and we're so primitive that we don't even know it. So sad.
Yeah, they've passed this little green-blue orb and just kept on going. Nothing there. Nothing of significance anymore.
Yeah, I mean, what makes us think that we are so arrogant that they're going to want to land on the White House lawn? Give me a
break. There is one other somewhat negative possibility, though, Professor, and that is that nobody ever gets to be a type 1.
Yeah, the other flip side of this is that perhaps type 0 civilizations are common, like us, but they never make it to type 1.
Right.
They self-destruct. So when we have starships and visit these planets one day, we may see atmospheres that are radioactive, atmospheres that are super hot, atmospheres with germs in them because they had warfare and they polluted their planet. And perhaps that's a warning that we are now on the verge of becoming type 1. We're making the historic transition, the first time in civilization, from one type to another type, and we may not make it.
At best, you're giving us 50-50 to make it to type 1 now. And that's pretty good compared to what you were giving.
It was more like
1 in 100.
Right.
1 in 100. So we certainly made progress, but I don't know. I mean, on a good day, I'm with you. 50-50 on a bad day, no way.
Yeah, but, you know, look at the spread of democracy. I mean, you know, when I open the newspaper, I can't believe what's happening. People taking to the streets. I mean, people taking control over their own future. You know, I mean, this was unheard of during the Cold War. During the Cold War, the world was frozen solid during the Cold War, right?
It's true. We're a solid notch above that.
Yeah, and so people are now taking their own destiny in their own hands. And so I think that's a real positive statement. And, like I said, you know, once governments become democratic, people worry about sewer systems and taxations and how to educate their kids. Mm-hmm. They don't want to glorify the king. They don't want to sacrifice their kids to some unnamed war in some unnamed continent, right? They want a good life for their kids.
Right. But I still would like to meet more 0.8 type people.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I had to throw that in. I guess there's a lot of planets out there, and we're looking harder and harder. What's the deal with Kepler?
Unfortunately, Kepler is the satellite that discovered thousands of these planets, and it's crippled right now. So unfortunately, it's not stable. It cannot lock on to planets and make the delicate measurements that it used to. However, there's enough data for us to analyze it for years to come. And Kepler only looked at a fragment of the Milky Way galaxy and found thousands of planets, and about, 1% or so of them are Earth-like. And so we may find a twin of the Earth in outer space, perhaps this year or next year, at the rate at which we're going. This year or next year, somebody's going to announce that we have found a twin of the Earth, same size, same characteristics, perhaps with liquid oceans. And that could be a game changer. Think about that, a twin of the Earth.
It could, but again, where are they? I mean, I want radio or TV or some, for example, will we ever have a instrument, even in space, delicate enough to detect any sign at all of civilization, even if they're not trying to communicate?
Well, it's not clear. I mean, it seems to me that a civilization that advanced may use lasers to communicate with each other rather than radio. And our satellites and our detection system are not equipped to look for extraterrestrial laser communications.
I've heard that they're beginning to think about looking for laser bursts from another civilization somewhere. Is that a likely prospect?
That's also possible because, the way in which we send information may not be the way they send information.
Right.
If your message is going to be scrambled across supernovas and gas clouds, you want redundancies and you want to spread your signal around a bit and you want to pulse it. And so, these messages being sent by extraterrestrials could be on a totally different kind of frequency. They could be spread over several different frequencies. They could be pulsed. There are many ways that they can increase the efficiency of transmission through gas clouds and supernovae. But we are looking for hydrogen frequency messages,
right,
which is stupid if you think about it. Why should aliens communicate with radio on a hydrogen frequency?
If you had one opportunity, Professor, to communicate something to life that might be out there, what would you tell them about the human race?
Well, first of all, I would not do what other scientists have done, and that is to advertise our existence and to give our exact coordinates in outer space with regards to the nearby stars. Yes. We don't know their intentions. Oh. I think their intentions are going to be good because, of course, if they're that advanced, there's plenty of uninhabited planets to plunder for natural resources. They don't have to bother with us. Okay. So I think they're going to be peaceful. However, on the small chance that they're not peaceful, I don't think we should advertise our existence.
Where
they
are.
May pick up a medallion and say to themselves, lunch, let's go have lunch.
Yes, I remember that. I think it was the Twilight Zone. All right, hold it right there, Professor, and we'll be right back. We're going to take one of our 2 hourly breaks. I guess I can do a third if I want to, but I don't have to. So we'll break here. We'll be right back with Professor Michio Kaku on Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell.
To initiate a dialogue sequence with Art Bell, please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
I've got to remind you not to call. Don't call now. Please don't call now. It'll ring for about 20 times, and then you'll be disconnected, and we're not yet ready to take calls. So just relax. Sit by your radio. And know those lines are available when you want them and need them. Now, you can send a message. If you have a question, a good one for Dr. Kaku or myself, you can go to the wormhole. I love that name, the wormhole. It's at artbell.com. Just go to artbell.com and go to the section called the wormhole. And then you can enter a message into the wormhole. And it will come out on my computer screen, my dumb computer screen, right here. So that's the deal. Don't call now. Messages at the wormhole. Dr. Kaku, welcome back.
Well, glad to be on. An honor.
Well, it's an honor to have you. Higgs boson, the Higgs particle, I saw a special on it, I think the other day, and it showed people like yourself and many others in a giant auditorium going, you know, yeah, hey, we found it. We found it finally. The Higgs particle, the God particle, it was called, I believe, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But how they found it was really weird. In other words, the giant Hadron Collider, or large one, I guess they call it, found it, but they found it not by seeing it, but like seeing where it was. In other words, they made it and it existed for a zillionth of a second and disappeared. So all they did was look at the clutter around it and said, ah, ha, 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 there was Higgs. Is that about right?
Yeah, it's like taking a piano and throwing it out of a 10-story building and listening to the crash of the piano. And then from the sound, reconstructing what the piano was made of. That's what we physicists have to do. We take protons, smash them like a piano thrown from a 10-story building, look at the debris, and then run the videotape backwards. When you run the videotape backwards, then you try to reassemble the piano as it impacts on the ground to reconstruct what the piano looks like. That's how we found the Higgs boson. We smash protons together at trillions of electron volts, look at all the garbage coming out, run the videotape backwards to the instant of the collision, and then we say, aha, bingo, we see it. There's the Higgs boson.
Okay. So it's definitely found. You have no doubt in your mind?
Yeah, no doubt in my mind. And the next particle to be bagged, I should point out, beyond the Higgs boson is, ta-da, dark matter. We hope to actually create dark matter in the laboratory with the Large Hadron Collider. That's the next big animal that we're going to bag, we hope.
Can you actually, I mean, you can't really, well, I guess bag is a loose term, but you couldn't take a bunch of Higgs particles and bag them at all because you'd just be empty, right?
Yeah, and dark matter, as you know, is the strangest form of matter that we've ever even conceived of. First of all, it's invisible, so that if you held dark matter in your hand, it'd be invisible. Second of all, it goes right through you like a ghost. If you held dark matter in your hand, it would literally filter right through your fingers and go through the floor.
It would go all the way. Is it fair to say dark matter is all around us?
We think it's all around us, right? We can't measure it directly because it is invisible and there's very little of it. If you held it in your hand, it would filter right through your hand down to China, reverse itself in China, and come back to the Earth and come back to where you're sitting in your living room, and then oscillate between your hand and China.
Why?
So dark matter is definitely some weird stuff.
wait, why would it do that?
Because of gravity. It has no electric charge, and therefore it goes right through matter as if it was a ghost. However, it does obey gravity, and so like a ball bouncing back and forth, it'll go all the way to China, stop, reverse itself, and come all the way back to, well, New York, where I am, and oscillate between New York and China as if the Earth weren't there.
That's amazing.
Dark matter is some pretty freaky stuff.
Yes, it is, and it's a perfect title for this program, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually think we're going to be able to create
that's the
dark
hope.
Matter, yes?
We're not sure that the Large Hadron Collider is powerful enough, because we are, in fact, you know, we're recreating Genesis. We're recreating the instant of the creation of the universe with this machine. And we're not clear that the Large Hadron Collider is large enough to do this. But, you know, we have our hopes, and we think that the next animal we want to bag beyond the Higgs boson is dark matter. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole shelf full of Nobel Prizes waiting for the young physicists who can figure out what dark matter is. You know, every high school textbook is wrong when they say that the universe is mainly made out of atoms. We now know that's wrong. The universe, as far as matter is concerned, is mainly made out of dark matter.
Is it possible, Professor, that dark matter would be a component of or part of the Higgs?
We think that the Higgs is ordinary matter in the sense that it interacts with the other particles in a very standard way. We think that dark matter is stable, but it has neutral charge, sort of like the neutron. The neutron also has neutral charge. It's unstable, so it disintegrates. However, dark matter is stable. You could put it on your table. It'll fall through the table, but, you know, you can temporarily put it on your table. Neutrons are unstable, but neutrons would also be very ghost-like. Neutrons also have zero charge. Neutrons also would just filter right through objects as if they didn't exist because they don't have any charge.
So with a big enough collider, we're essentially creating, I guess would be the way to put it. When you bang these together hard enough, eventually you're going to possibly end up with something that approximates creation. Is that correct?
That's right. We were supposed to have our machine outside Dallas, Texas, the super collider, but it was canceled because one congressman asked a physicist, among other things, will we find God with your super collider? And the physicist says, no, we won't find God, but we'll find the Higgs boson. Well, all the jaws hit the floor in Congress. What? $10 billion for a goddamn subatomic particle. And they canceled our machine.
Right.
Now, I would have answered it differently. I would have said, God, by whatever signs or symbols you ascribe to the deity, this machine, the supercollider, will take us as close as humanly possible to his greatest creation, and that is Genesis. This is a Genesis machine. It'll recreate on a tiny microscopic scale the instant of creation. That's what I would have said. However, we said Higgs boson, and the machine was canceled.
Are we really sure, Professor, that when we get really creative with one of these big colliders, we're not going to do something that we regret?
Well, you know, I had lunch with a producer from the Science Fiction Channel one day, and I casually mentioned to him that, well, yeah, there are some people who might think that it's going to create a black hole that's going to swallow up the Earth, blah, blah, blah. But I told him I didn't think so because, you know, cosmic rays from outer space bathe the Earth with energies much greater than this pea shooter called the Large Hadron Collider. But anyway, they ran with it, and they did a TV series, and it scared the hell out of people.
And look, Professor, sometimes very small things, and modern hydrogen bombs are actually pretty small if you want them to be, do really big things. And so along that line of thinking, you have to allow at least a tiny probability of something really big happening from something from some really small collision. So
yeah, but you can measure that probability. We have cosmic rays in outer space that have much more energy than what we Earthlings can attain on the planet Earth. And the Earth is bathed in the radiation from these collisions, you know, like black holes colliding with other black holes, far beyond what the Large Hadron Collider can produce. And hey, we're still here. So the very fact that we're here is proof that the probability is near zero that the Large Hadron Collider is dangerous.
Near zero.
Near zero, but, right.
Okay, Large Hadron Collider, but maybe the next collider or the one after it. In other words, at some point, as we progress, and we always progress, isn't it possible that some little thing, some little collision will have some really big effect, some big creative effect?
Well, I think with nuclear energy, there is definitely that possibility because, you know, you have 100 tons of nuclear waste stored in one small compartment. However, there is talk about the next generation beyond the Large Hadron Collider. The Japanese government wants to stimulate its moribund economy. It has $10 billion to throw around. And they want to back the ILC, the International Linear Collider. And that's picking up a lot of steam now because the Japanese government is pushing it. It's a prestige project, generate a lot of prestige for Japan, stimulate the economy because it is pork barrel. And it's to create the next generation of particles beyond the Large Hadron Collider, specifically dark matter.
Mm-hmm. How big?
Well, it's going to be miles long. We have a linear collider outside San Francisco at Stanford. It's 2 miles long. And this is going to be many multiples of that. So it's going to be miles and miles long, a linear collider that slams electrons into anti-electrons. And we hope to find, you know, particles beyond the Higgs. That is.
Okay, so for people who are not collider familiar, that'd be most of us, what's the deal? The bigger the collider, miles and miles and miles and miles long, The faster the acceleration, the bigger the collision. What's the deal?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You got it. The bigger they are, the faster they go, the more energy you get in the collision. And then you're going backwards in time. It's a time machine because you're recreating matter that didn't exist since 13.7 billion years, since the beginning of the universe. That was the Big Bang. So we're recreating on a tiny, tiny microscopic scale matter that didn't exist for 13.7 billion years since the beginning of the universe. So what we want to do is to figure out, you know, why the universe banged. What set off the universe? What was the match that set off the Big Bang?
And that's really meeting up with God, isn't it?
That's why they call it the God particle. We are talking about the ultimate questions. Why are we here? Why does the universe exist the way it does? That's what the Higgs boson does. The Higgs boson, we think, is part of the fuse, the match the match that lit the Big Bang. And that's why we call it the God particle. I tell you, man, this is deep stuff.
It is. But when you talk about the match, that really makes it sound like, well, you know, when we've got the match and we've got it just right and we strike it, look out, baby. It's creation time. And you know, with that comes at least the probability of something really big.
Yeah, but you have to realize that when the universe was set off, it was a pretty big lump of matter that detonated to create the universe. We're talking about itsy-bitsy little teeny-weeny large hadron collider compared to the universe.
You're absolutely sure, Professor, that it wasn't some 0.9 civilization pushing the button on the big new shiny toy, really big collider, and then, you know, I mean, what if that's how come we're here?
Well, like I said before, Mother Nature is the biggest accelerator of particles that we know of. Mother Nature has created an accelerator much bigger than the Large Hadron Collider, and it's called the Big Bang. The Big Bang is the biggest accelerator known to science, created by Mother Nature.
But look what happened.
It created the universe. We're bathed by radiation from colliding black holes. Black holes weigh, you know, many millions of times more than the Earth, and when they collide, they release an enormous burst of radiation, and the Earth is bathed in that radiation. It's called cosmic rays, and these cosmic rays are some of them are much more energetic than what we get with the Large Hadron Collider, and hey, we're still here.
Well,
so that's why I say the probability is pretty much zero that it's going to be dangerous.
Do you ever worry that one day you'll wake up and you'll suddenly hear from some astronomer somewhere that, oh, my God, we've just spotted two black holes within our area of responsibility that appear to be headed for each other?
Well, I would worry more that they find a black hole that's headed our way that's wandering. Wandering black holes, as we discussed earlier, have been discovered, and they give you no warning. They creep up on you, and we were tracking one right now as it goes across the Milky Way galaxy, and that's kind of scary stuff, because you would have no warning that a black hole is about to eat up your entire solar system. It would eat up the Earth and not even burp. It would eat up the sun, for that matter. And we have very little warning because it's invisible. The only way we know that these wandering black holes exist is because starlight is distorted as it moves, sort of like the Predator. When the Predator in the movie moves across the background, it kind of distorts the background a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's how we know that these wandering black holes exist. That I would worry about.
All right, so let's say you wake up one morning, you get a call from an astronomer many astronomers who are suddenly saying, look, we have an increasingly large number of stars disappearing from the field that we're capable of viewing. In other words, something's headed apparently directly toward us.
Yeah, I would worry about that. And another worry is that when stars collide, they can release a burst of radiation called a gamma ray burst.
Right.
And there's a potential gamma ray burster headed our way, WR104.
Really?
And we think that we are within the kill radius. We're within the kill radius of this gigantic cosmic firecracker when it goes off.
Really?
Just Google it, WR104. Google it.
I'm writing that down right now. WR104?
Right. It's two gigantic stars that are dying. They're in a death dance, chasing each other.
We know the plane of this.
And it will undergo a gamma ray burst, which is the largest source of energy other than the Big Bang itself. And it could be headed our way.
We don't know when
it's going to detonate, though. It's a big question mark.
I see. And if it did detonate, what would we... I don't know. What would we notice?
Well, it would not be pleasant. It would destroy not just the Earth. It would destroy most of the solar system. The radiation is the most intense since the Big Bang itself. We see these gamma ray bursts all the time now with our satellites, but usually they're headed the wrong way. They're not headed toward Earth. Here we have two stars that have not yet collided, and when they do collide and undergo gamma ray burst, it'll create a gigantic rifle bullet, and this rifle bullet is headed our way. There's a debate among astronomers as to how close it's going to graze the Earth, whether it will totally hit the Earth or graze the Earth. Astronomers are not yet decided. It goes back and forth.
I haven't heard about this debate. In fact, I haven't heard of WR-104 or anything until just now. You're the one telling me about this.
Yes, it's something that we have to look at seriously. It's thousands of light years away. However, a gamma ray burst will go across 6,000 to 8,000 light years. And anything in its path will be incinerated. The ozone layer of the atmosphere will be blown off, and life forms will be scorched by ultraviolet radiation from the sun. So it's not going to be pleasant, and we don't know when it's going to go off. Some people think that maybe it has already gone off, but you know, it takes thousands of years for the light to hit us. But when the light hits us, it's going to scorch the Earth.
So in other words, it would basically sterilize.
That's right. And, you know,
sterilize, Professor, or worse?
It'll scorch the Earth. Life forms as we know it will die. And, the Earth could be laid barren by this. And, if you Google WR-104, we have motion pictures of this thing. Motion pictures of the two stars in a death dance as they circle each other. And they will explode by the laws of physics. By the laws of physics, it will undergo a hypernova of some sort, and it'll release, like a rifle bullet, a burst of radiation to the North Pole and the South Pole. And we are staring down the gun barrel. We're staring down the gun barrel of WR-104.
What brings the astronomers or yourself to the conclusion that the gun is pointed at us?
Well, we have the two stars circulating around each other, so we know the plane of these two stars. And when they collide, therefore, we know the direction of the North Pole. And we're staring down the gun barrel.
Holy smokes.
However, you know, there's debate among astronomers. It goes back and forth as to how close the beam is going to graze the Earth or whether it's going to hit the Earth or not. But if it hits the Earth, there's not going to be much left of the Earth.
Would there be, I mean, it's radiation, right?
That's right, gamma radiation.
Okay, radiation. So could there be a project where the United States would dig under, I don't know, Ohio, and we'd have some great underground shelter to try to continue humanity? Gee, just like a movie.
Well, that's the only way of escape. You cannot go into outer space because it'll scorch the entire solar system. The gamma ray burst is going to be huge.
Our space program isn't up to it anyway.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. The only solution would be to go underground. And again, we don't know when it's going to fire, so we don't want to cause a panic. It may not fire for thousands of years, maybe millions of years.
Would there be any warning whatsoever?
Very little, because the warning itself would travel at the speed of light, and the beam, of course, traveled to the speed of light. We would see these two things begin to coalesce into one and then fire.
Okay, so there'd be a little warning of the imminent collision, yeah, right?
Yeah, that's right, as we track it. And remember, we're looking at the past. We're looking at these stars as they were thousands of years ago.
So this might have already occurred?
That's right. Some people think that maybe it's already occurred, except we're too stupid to know it.
Right. Oh, I get it. And you know what? I wasn't worried when we started this program tonight. Now I'm worried. Professor, stay right where you are, and we will be right back. Now I'm actually worried. How about you?
All of times
geosynchronous orbit at the speed of light. This is Dark Matter with Art Bell. To call Art, please light up the lines at 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Pretty cool number, huh? 1-855-REAL-UFO. But don't call yet. Don't do it. What happens is you call and you let it ring. It'll ring for 20 rings, and then you'll get frustrated and say bad things about me. And so just don't call. Just relax. We'll get to calls here shortly. Right now I'm still contemplating two stars coming together. They can actually see them coming together. The gamma ray burst that will occur when that happens, and the fact that they're pointed at us like a gun barrel. First I ever heard of this. Some of you out there may want to Google WR104, okay, right. So, Professor, my guest is Professor Michio Kaku. They're watching these stars come together. Now, that makes me ask, well, if they're actually watching them move toward each other with the consequences you discussed, they should be able to at least make a rough guess about how long it is before they get together with what we're seeing looking back in time like that and sort of know when it might happen or not.
Well, yes or no. First of all, each of these two stars is unstable. They will undergo the process of supernova. That's the laws of physics. We know it's going to happen. Even if they don't collide, they individually can undergo the process. We just don't know when it's going to happen. It may have already happened, in which case tomorrow we could be fried, or it may take millions of years to happen. It's sort of like Yellowstone National Park. You know, we know the Yellowstone is on top of a supervolcano. Sooner or later, we know the Yellowstone is going to erupt and tear the guts out of the United States, but we don't know when. It could be thousands of years from now or tomorrow. So we have to live with that uncertainty, among all the other uncertainties.
All right, so you're saying that these two stars that are coming together, and we know for certain they're coming together and that it's going to happen, but we don't know when, and the fact is it could have already happened.
That's right.
How far, roughly, away from us are they?
They are about, 7,000-8,000 light years, and so we're within the kill radius of the gamma ray burst. So a gamma ray burst, first of all, an ordinary supernova would have to be maybe within 10 light years of the Earth to cause damage. Mm-hmm. However, a gamma ray burster is the second largest explosion known to science other than the Big Bang itself.
Right.
The energy output will outshine an entire galaxy. And so the energy output, you just calculate, would be enough to incinerate anything in its path for thousands of light years. And so we are in the kill zone of WR104. That's why we're tracking it. That's why we're looking at it. And that's why scientists write papers trying to estimate the angle, at which the beam is going to come out, when it comes out, and whether or not we are in the beam or slightly outside the beam.
And
this is a matter of scientific debate.
And we're mostly in it.
A few years ago, the thinking was that we were maybe a few degrees outside. A paper was just published saying that, no, we are smack in the middle. So it goes back and forth. But it's a decidable question. You know, the more data we get from WR104, the more data we'll be able to analyze. And there could be others. There could be other gamma ray bursters.
Let's talk about the upside of this. Let's say it's already happened. And that, I don't know, next year, this gamma ray burst hits us. No warning.
Yeah, it's not going to be
pretty
pleasant.
Maybe it would be. I mean, would we die slowly or would we just blink out?
It would take place over a matter of weeks. The ozone layer, which surrounds the Earth, is very sensitive to radiation. It protects us. Without the ozone layer, we would get sunburn very rapidly going outside. So if the gamma ray burst were to hit us, it would knock out maybe 50% of the ozone layer, depending upon which calculation you look at. But, you know, if 50% of the ozone layer is knocked out, that's a huge amount of X-rays coming from the sun, just bathing all life forms on the planet Earth.
Oh, my God. So it would be a slow roast.
It would not be pleasant, right? However, as some people have pointed out, it means that we humans, because we're intelligent, would have to live underground. We would have to put cities underground in order to survive the scorching radiation coming from the sun.
Okay, quick question. Would this radiation come, sterilize, and then go? Or would the radiation be bathing us for the next, you know, whatever?
Well, when a supernova goes off, the radiation does damp down pretty rapidly. However, it'll go for months, as the radiation rains down on the Earth. And with the ozone layer gone, it means that the effect will be permanent. And so all life on Earth is going to be affected. Plants, for example, will die off. And that means vegetation will no longer provide food for the people on the Earth. And and the animals that eat plants, of course, would also die in the process. The food chain would be disrupted. The oceans, the forests, they would die. So, animal life, fishes, mammals, all of them would be affected. If the ozone layer were to go. Not a pleasant sight.
Offered an opportunity to go underground, knowing this was either beginning to occur or was occurring, would you go, or would you stay up here and just sort of welcome it?
Well, even if there's a slightest chance of surviving, it's worthwhile to go underground. You would have to have, of course, canned foods and things to survive for several months when the worst of it is over. But then the ozone layer is going to be permanently damaged. So life as we know it will be permanently damaged.
So
but
any big sun flare, any sort of radiation at all after that would get us.
That's right. We'd be constantly bathed by intense X-rays, which would kill off vegetation, kill off animals, blind animals with eyes. It's not going to be pleasant. And so it means that the population that survived underground is going to have a food crisis. They may have to grow food underground, using hydroponics, basically to create a whole civilization underground in order to grow food that is not going to be hit with all the X-rays coming from the sun. So civilization as we know it would shrink enormously because we would have to create an entire agriculture underground to survive because it would be permanently too radioactive outside. That is too much X-rays bathing the surface outside.
Wow, that would change everything. Even if you got underground and you were under Cincinnati or whatever, as you point out, you need food, all the green stuff would be gone, you'd need hydroponics, you'd need to plan ahead for this by years and years and years. I wonder, Professor, will there come a time when the world scientists will say, hey, this is happening, or we just observed a bright flash, and it's about to happen, or it's happening, however the word will come down. Will there come a time that people like yourself will inform governments like ours that, okay, it's a sink or swim, so to speak?
Well, we used to be worried about stars like Betelgeuse. That is, we used to catalog all the nearby unstable stars that are red giants that will pop and become a supernova. However, Betelgeuse is far enough away that a conventional supernova at that scale will not affect the Earth that much. It'll light up the night sky. It'll probably be as bright as the moon, but it's not going to kill the Earth with this radiation. Now, a gamma ray burst is a game changer. It's a game changer because now we're talking about, the formation of a black hole. Now we're talking about the largest energy source that we can conceive of after the Big Bang. And their kill radius can go to thousands of light years. And so all of a sudden now we're scanning the heavens to see if there are any other WR104s out there within the Milky Way.
Again, Professor, you didn't answer. Now, do people like yourself talk to policymakers, top government people, about are you ever invited to lunch? Let's talk about what if. Do you ever have those conversations with government, or can you not say?
Well, with something like WR104, we need to take more data. We know that we're very close to being in the gun barrel or are inside the gun barrel, but, you know, it goes back and forth depending upon which astronomer you talk to.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to spread panic. We don't want to go out there and announce that, therefore, we should all dig underground and build fallout shelters. We're just looking at the situation very carefully.
Depending on how sure you become.
Well, we're pretty sure that it has to be monitored very carefully. You know, we are talking about life and death in the solar system, not just the planet Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that, you know, people will write scientific papers about. But like I said, it's like Yellowstone. You know, we know that Yellowstone's going to pop one day and, you know, take most of the United States with it. But we don't know when. You know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, but there'd be people in Tahiti left. I mean, with what you're talking about, it would be sterilization of the planet.
The whole planet, that's right.
Right, and I would think this would be something that you would talk, I mean, reasonably, talk to secretly, perhaps, government leaders about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there are other things that we have to worry about, you know, talking about radiation from outer space. The sun, for example, could have a coronal mass discharge.
And
if
it
that
could.
Would be, if they hit the Earth, like it did in 1859...
I guess. It's been such a lousy sun cycle. I mean, what happened to this sun cycle anyway? It's such a poop out.
Well, it's a dud, but, you know, that's a good thing, because if the sun has a temper tantrum and we're in the bullseye of the sun, it's not going to be pleasant. You know, the Carrington event 150 years ago would have knocked out civilization as we know it.
But you know, there are people who study the sun, Professor, who say that this may be the beginning of the end. And they're saying the beginning of the end of sun cycles that are active at all. They what they see ahead, some are predicting no action on the sun at all. Zero.
Well, you know, I'm a member of the American Physical Society. That's the leading physics organization in the United States. A subcommittee actually went to Congress and said that it could be $2 trillion in property damage if the sun were to have a gigantic flare that would hit the Earth. $2 trillion in property damage.
Sure.
We asked for a few hundred million to reinforce satellites, reinforce power stations, create redundant systems, shielding. We got nothing. Zero
nothing?
From Congress.
Hmm.
Okay, so much for, you know, talking to politicians. You get the giggle factor. You talk to them about, you know, solar flares from the sun. And they sort of
funny?
Like look at you and giggle.
They think that's funny.
Yeah, they think it's funny.
Oh,
but
yeah?
We
well,
know.
Maybe
that
I ought to tell them
happened.
About WR-104. See how they giggle at that.
Yeah, well, like I said, you have to tell people the reality that, you know, there are things which are which can end life as we know it.
Yes. Speaking of life as we know it, I want to promo this for you. They say, what is it, publish or perish? Well, you're nowhere near perishing. You sure do publish. You got a new book coming out, right?
Yeah, that's right, in February. I've always been fascinated by the mind ever since I was a child reading science fiction. You know, telepathy, telekinesis, uploading memories and stuff. We can begin to do these things now. It's absolutely stunning progress in neuroscience. So the new book is called Future of the Mind, coming out in February. Doubleday is the publisher. And I get a chance to, you know, interview these people, talk to them, go to their laboratories and stuff. And it's just staggering what we can do when you connect the mind to a computer. The mind connected to a computer can now move objects around, like telekinesis. Move wheelchairs, household appliances. We can move the cursor on a computer screen. Anything you can do on a computer can be done by the brain connected to a laptop computer. And so we can now even read certain thoughts. Certain thoughts can be transmitted from brain to brain. So telepathy is not totally out of the question.
Why does a computer help? I mean, a little while ago you were complaining of the stupidity of computers.
Yeah,
I mean,
computers cannot create original thoughts or learn anything. However, they're good adding machines. And what they do is they take the electrical signals of the brain, and we write a subroutine that then decodes them and translates these signals of the brain into something that's recognizable, which can then be used to drive a wheelchair, an appliance, a mechanical arm. And so people who are totally paralyzed, who are vegetables, can now live a reasonably normal life, communicating, playing video games, and interacting with the world.
Would be using a computer then as sort of a bridge to whatever we want to happen.
Yeah, this is called synthetic telepathy, not the telepathy a la magicians and magic shows in Las Vegas, but using computers to decipher thoughts. In fact, we're at the verge now of being able to photograph a dream and be able to videotape a dream.
Really?
Already we can videotape people's thoughts so that if you're thinking about a bird or you're thinking about a car or something, we can get a computer that will MRI the brain and then reconstruct a reasonable approximation to a bird or a car or whatever you're thinking. And when you're sleeping, this machine will continue to decipher images that the brain is thinking. And I had a chance to go to Berkeley, where I got my PhD, and actually see some of these computer programs. One person was dreaming, and he was put into an MRI machine, and the computer said that he was dreaming about people's faces. It's still a crude computer program. It couldn't do any better than that. But the very fact that you can tell what a person is dreaming about is incredible, right?
A little worrisome, actually. Well, I mean, are we going to get to the point where somebody's dream is going to be available to us in 1080p?
We have to make sure that privacy is enforced so that, you know, you don't want other people to watch your dreams, right? You want to be able to wake up one day and watch the dream you had the previous night, not someone else.
However, I would say this, yes. If you could sort of store them like on a DVR, I'm all for that. I've had some doozers.
Yeah, and you know, you forget them within a few minutes after you wake up. And also there's something called lucid dreaming where you actually can control the direction of your dream.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now in Germany. They've actually took patients who are lucid dreamers who are conscious while they dream, and they hooked them up to an MRI machine, and sure enough, they were able to actually control their dream.
Quick question for you. You're absolutely correct. We forget our dreams literally in moments from waking up, unless we make some kind of really serious conscious effort to remember them and or write them down. That's the best thing to do. But we do forget them. Why is that?
We don't know. We don't even know why we dream. We don't know where dreams come from. But, science is getting to the point where we'll be able to photograph dreams. This is being done in Kyoto, Japan, and also Berkeley, California. And to the point where we'll be able to wake up one day and see the images that we were dreaming the previous night. The back of your brain is the visual cortex. That's where images are processed. And, MRI machines can begin to decipher the images that you see when you're conscious. But, you know, these machines will also operate when you're asleep as well. And it will actually, you know, construct images as you sleep. And so this could give us a whole new way of looking at the mind, you know, the mind unleashed, basically.
Yes.
And also,
I was going to say, I'm sorry. We're worried now about the NSA.
Mm-hmm.
Reading our emails, listening to our phone calls, blah, blah, blah. If there was the ability for anybody to monitor our dreams, you know, some facility up in Utah is going to be categorizing dreams and storing them and sending out guys in black to meet with us when it's not to their expectations.
Well, first of all, privacy is going to have to be one main concern. And I write about this in my book, you know, Future of the Mind. First of all, telepathy, as we know it, requires measuring electrical signals of the brain. But these electrical signals damp very rapidly as you go away from the brain, much faster than ordinary radio. So it means that you're going to have to get up and close to the person in order to make any kinds of measurements. So privacy is a concern, but there are ways to shield the mind. And, somebody would have to get very close to the brain in order to be able to analyze thoughts. That means you have to have the person's permission. And so I think that privacy will be a problem. However, there are safeguards. You can shield the brain and also, you know, make sure that people don't get close to you where they can put listening devices near your brain. And
perhaps so, but I envision this day, Professor, when, I don't know, somebody out there is monitoring our dreams and one of us has a dream about I don't know, blowing something up, something that even sounds remotely subversive or troublemaking, and then, you know, at the door. So far, the whole privacy argument has not worked out too well, frankly.
Well, governments will always try to spy as much as they can. That's why in a democracy, we have to make sure that the people are aware of this and that put a lid on it, right?
Yes, yes. And so far, the lid's off.
Hopefully democracy has checks and balances. So we make sure that we don't get into a 1984 situation where we have, Big Brother watching us all the time. That's one of the advantages. The fact that the internet, it makes information so freely available is one of the reasons why everybody knows about the problem so quickly.
A lot of people would say, look, 1984 was a long time ago, brother.
In other words,
it's already here.
Well, you see, because the internet is out of the bag, no one can control the entire internet, which means that as long as governments try to eavesdrop on us, there will be ways in which this will be revealed and given to the international media really quick. And so I think there are checks and balances. I mean, governments will always try to do this, right? Armies, for example, want to win wars. They don't want to lose wars. They want to win wars.
Right.
Governments want to govern. And, of course, they're going to try to eavesdrop. Therefore, it means that we have to step in, the people, and use the internet in order to make sure that there are safeguards. So there are checks and balances, I think, here.
Well, perhaps so. But, again, I'm pointing out that it hasn't worked out very well thus far.
Mm-hmm.
I do read these precious documents we talk about, and I'm almost to the point where, I'm saying, what we ought to do is put the Bill of Rights at the end of our email, and if we did, maybe the government would read it.
Yeah, but remember, in the 50s and 60s, it was a lot worse. The government had a top-secret program called MKUltra, and MKUltra, roped in many, many universities and top scientists to do all sorts of bogus experiments on the brain, LSD, drugs, truth serums, all sorts of crazy things were investigated by the CIA and the government, in the name of national security. But, in a democracy, things come out. Now we have many of these documents that have been declassified. And we know the kind of shenanigans that the CIA was involved with, drugging people without their permission.
Sure.
Some of them were given LSD and committed suicide as a consequence. This information finally did get out. But remember, that was the Cold War. And that was when the military thought the Russians were doing it. And so we have to do it, too, these mind control experiments.
Do you really think the old bad old days are gone? In other words, yes, I know. Everything has calmed down. There's no more nuclear threat from Russia to the U.S., I guess. And so the bad old days are gone. Are they really gone?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about. The big nukes, we don't have to worry about so much, but now we have the little nukes. We have nuclear weapons proliferating into the worst possible places on the Earth.
Right.
The most unstable areas of the Earth, that's where nuclear weapons are proliferating.
North Korea.
One day someone's going to have a suitcase bomb and, put it in someone's sewer system and then blackmail you, right?
Professor, were those real?
Suitcase bombs are actually real in the sense that you can get a credible nuclear device that's quite small and compact that will do a considerable amount of damage. And that's what we have to worry about. People worry about missiles, but a suitcase bomb is in some sense worse.
There was always sort of a debate about whether that was science fiction or it was real. And you're saying it's real.
Yeah, we can miniaturize. These are called third generation hydrogen warheads.
Tailor-made
warheads now.
All right, wonderful. Professor, hold tight just a moment. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back. Professor Michio Kaku is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Dark Matter.
Save me, but you. Strange world desire.
Space, the new frontier for Art Bell's dark matter. To call the show, please dial 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Well, all right. I once again have to urge you not to call yet because we have not quite decided to take questions, but we're going to do that shortly. So, you know what? Go ahead and call. Why not? Let's see it light up. I've been waiting for this moment anyway. If you have a question for Dr. Kaku, Professor Kaku, then I guess now would be a good time to call. The number is, and it's a new number, and don't imagine it's just one person that can get through, because you can all get through. The number is 855-732-5836. Or, put another way, 855-REAL-UFO. That's a pretty neat number, huh? 1-855-REAL-UFO. And when you call that number, we will try and be sure that you have a legitimate question for Dr. Kaku, and you'll be put on hold, and then we will proceed. In the meantime, back to the subject of suitcase nukes. Professor, welcome back.
Yeah, glad to be on.
Okay, so I've never seen one of these little things, but you're saying they definitely exist.
It's possible. These are called third-generation hydrogen warheads. Several of my friends actually designed hydrogen warheads. They tell me that first-generation warheads were huge, gigantic objects. They couldn't barely fit into the bomb bay of a B-29 bomber.
Right.
Second generation are the MIRVs. You could put 10 of them inside a nose cone of a missile. Miniature
right.
bombs are the second generation hydrogen warheads. Third generation are custom-made designer warheads. Star Wars, for example, nukes in space. They could be used in the jungle. They could be used in the desert. Earth penetrators that detonate underground to knock out bunkers. So these are third-generation warheads, which are designer warheads. And, yeah, some of them can be miniaturized down to the point where they can be put into a suitcase.
Okay.
Now, I don't think that the adversaries of the United States can do that. They're not at the first-generation level. They're still at the first-generation level. But sooner or later, you know, they may get the capability of miniaturizing these nuclear weapons.
Oh,
and
you're
then
saying
it becomes dangerous.
We can do it, right? We can do it
we
now.
We can do it, right.
Uh-huh. What about the Russians?
Oh, yeah, the Russians can do it as well, right. They have
great.
Top
okay.
physicists there as well. Right?
All right. Humor me then. Without giving me classified information, how powerful in, I don't know, kilotons, megatons, could a device that would fit in a briefcase be?
Probably the sub-megaton region. I mean, probably in the order of, well, a Hiroshima bomb would be definitely possible. In the order of maybe 20 kilotons of TNT.
Wow. That's good. So that's a whole city.
Right. And so, again, people are worried about nations developing missile technology. But even without missiles, a suitcase bomb can do a lot of damage, especially blackmail. You know, they put one in your sewer system and say, okay, give up or else we'll blow up San Francisco or whatever. And so, you know, these are things to worry about with the proliferation of these nuclear weapons.
I'm worried. I wouldn't have thought that something that small would have yielded that kind of yield. So do you have any idea how many we made, how many they made, how many are hanging around somewhere?
Well, at the height of the Cold War, both Russia and the United States made on the order of about 30,000 nuclear weapons apiece. So total at one point approached about 60,000.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge number.
It certainly
since then,
is.
Of course, we've dismantled a lot of them, but still there are a lot of small tactical nuclear weapons. The Davy Crockett, for example, could be fired from an artillery shell. So even an artillery shell could contain an atomic bomb. That was the Davy Crockett.
Wow. All right. We're so short on time here. You know, and I do want to get to the phones for these folks. You talk about in your book, in your new book, The Future of the Mind, about the possibility, and this has always fascinated me, of uploading memories, sort of like in the Matrix. Now, I've heard recent news that scientists are actually prepared, Professor, to test the theory that we might be in a matrix now, and they figured out some way to test for that. Have you heard of that?
Well, let's break it down. Okay, first of all, with mice, just a few weeks ago at MIT, they were able to insert a false memory into a mouse. In Los Angeles, scientists there have been able for the past few years to insert real memories into a mouse. So uploading memories has been done, very simple memories, memories that a mouse can absorb. But the very fact you can do it is amazing. Second of all, there are some people who think that maybe the universe is a matrix. It's very hard to disprove that theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
All theories
sure.
have to be falsifiable, but it's
right.
awfully hard to falsify a statement that reality as we know it is a matrix. But I haven't heard about any test that'll do it. Most people would think that it's not a falsifiable statement. That is, there's no experiment that you can create that'll determine whether or not you live in the matrix or not. In other words, whether or not you are a CD that some being has put the play button, and there you are thinking you have free will, but actually you're nothing but a CD running around in somebody's PC.
Mm-hmm.
So to best of my knowledge, it's an undecidable statement. It's not falsifiable.
Okay. But you're saying they've uploaded a memory into a mouse. What sort of memory? How do they know they've succeeded?
A mouse was taught, for example, to tap a button when it was given water. A very simple memory. Then it was given a drug that it forgot the memory. They recorded the memory when it was originally made, reinserted it back in, and the mouse relearned it after forgetting it. So they know that it was done correctly. At MIT, they actually put a false memory, a memory of something that didn't happen, and the mouse responded to it. So we do know that the hippocampus, which is deep inside the brain, is where memories are first processed. You can now record the processing process using electrodes, play back the memory, play back the recording back into the hippocampus, and bingo, the mouse relearns what it had forgotten.
Hey, a little while ago, we were talking about recording dreams. Now we're talking about something far more worrisome, and that is the injection of ideas or thoughts into, for example, a human being.
Right. However, eventually, it may make possible a brain net. That is, some people think that the next evolutionary step for the internet, which will take a few decades, is the brain net, whereby we exchange more than just digital and text messages. We actually exchange emotions, thoughts, memories, feelings, and that a brain net is probably possible. Initial steps have already been made in different laboratories, and so a brain net may be the ultimate way in which we exchange information. So the memory of your winning some prize may be sent to all your people on your mailing list. So it won't be a text message. It'll be a memory message.
A memory message.
A brain net, basically.
But think of the horrid possibilities for that.
Well, that's why we have to make sure that you control your memories, that you don't let someone else gain control over them. This could have problems. If you can inject false memories into a witness in a murder trial, the witness does not know what really happened because a false memory has been injected into their mind. So we would have to make sure that people have control over the memories that are injected into them. Once we
Professor,
have
every advance you make, and every time we talk, there's many more advances. They have such a, I don't know, such a scary side to them, injecting memories into people or thoughts into people. I mean, at some point, governments, do I have to say any more? Governments.
Well, governments will do what it takes to govern. And if they think that's what it takes to govern, they'll try it. And that's why in a democracy, you know, people have to make sure that there are reins and checks and balances and controls on these things.
Vote for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
But the upside is that you'll be able to learn calculus without having to crack open a book. Workers will be able to retrain if their job becomes obsolete. They'll be able to retrain for a new job requiring higher skills. It could unleash a whole new era of learning.
Or something. Okay, some other things that we might touch on very quickly because we're way out of time and I really want to get some people on the air. Mars. Will are we ever going to get astronauts? I know there's a program going on right now to volunteer to go to Mars, one-way trip. But, I mean, are we ever really going to, do you think, colonize Mars or just pass it by?
Well, first of all, NASA is suffering from identity crisis. People call it the agency to nowhere. You know,
right.
They boldly go where everybody has already gone before.
Right.
And the question is, where is it going to go? The NASA director just a few months ago finally said that, yes, Mars is the destination for NASA. Now, of course, Congress has to approve the funding for such an ambitious program.
Right.
But apparently NASA will bypass the moon. The Chinese will be on the moon around 2025, and so we're going to have a Sputnik shock when the Chinese flag is planted on the moon. But, hopefully we'll be well on our way to Mars by around that time. And, we need a new booster rocket. And it's no picnic going to Mars. It took 3 days to go to the moon. A round trip to Mars would take about 2 years. And so it's an order of magnitude more difficult in terms of distance, cost, but it's something that is doable, you know. And President Obama even talked about in the 2030s, he wouldn't be surprised if one day he opened the newspaper and read about astronauts walking the surface of Mars. So Mars could be the next big goal, but it's not an easy one. The moon was relatively close. And familiar. Mars is totally alien.
Well, I would say that ultimately it would be to our advantage on Earth to begin to place humans, wouldn't it, on other planets, difficult as it may be, just in case.
Yeah, I think we should be a two-planet species. Carl Sagan mentioned that. A two-planet species because, you know, we have everything in one basket, that is the Earth. And one dinosaur killing asteroid that's 6 miles across can wipe out all life as we know it.
Yes.
And so, we need a backup, humanity 2.0. And so colonizing Mars is a difficult process. It would take decades to centuries. But, you got to start somewhere. So Mars is one possibility. And,
They're always talking about, yesterday we had this close call with an asteroid.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that's worrisome, by the way, hearing about yesterday we had a close call. How about a couple, 3 days ago, they told us we were about to have a close call. That happens sometimes. But the ones I hate are yesterday or last week, a big one passed us right by.
We don't
see them all, do we?
Yeah, we were clueless for most of human history. Now we have satellites. Now we have telescopes. We can actually see these damn things. And now we really realize that these things go past the Earth at night. We are totally oblivious to these near misses. They happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, paying our taxes and, sending our kids to college. And now we realize that there are these close calls that happen quite frequently. So I think the next step is to put a satellite that is specifically designed to track these close encounters and give us an early warning system. Not that we can do anything.
Are the politicians going to, is there a chuckle factor here or have they quit laughing on this one?
No, they're still giggling over this one too.
Really?
Yeah, the proposal to put a space telescope, that's the simplest possible thing you can do to track these asteroids, that got nowhere. So I think we're in a situation where, on one hand, we make fun of NASA because it's not going anywhere, but then, Congress doesn't give them the funds to even do simple projects like, photograph asteroids that go whizzing right by.
Right. I'm sure you scientists get very tired of getting chuckled at.
Yes.
All right, Professor, this will be my first call that I'm going to take. So if you wouldn't mind, let's see what's out there. Good evening or morning or whatever it is, wherever you are, you're on the air. Dark Matter, I'm Art Bell with Dr. Kaku. Hi.
Hey, Art. Wow. Good evening. Incredible to hear you on the air again. My wife and I joked. I found out, I heard, or I guess I read on the internet, that you were coming back to the air. while she was in active labor in late July. And she joked with me that if it were not for the fact that we were about to have our first child, a little girl, just as I know you've had a blessing in your life the past few years, she joked that if that weren't the case, that your news of coming back would be the biggest thing I'd be talking about for months. So I'm really excited to hear you back on the air. And also, by the way, I don't think you have any need to do any pacing around. You're absolutely knocking it out of the park tonight with Dr. Kaku. So
he's knocking it out of the park. I'm just sitting here. Anyway, do you have a question? Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Okay, you know, he was talking about the matched particles earlier in the program, and the idea that, you know, something can be on the other end of the universe. And the and y'all were talking about how the particle can react a certain way, and I was wondering, there's something called, I guess it's the whole field is called new physics. You know, the idea that the standard model of the universe, how the universe works, doesn't explain everything. I wanted to know what he thinks is out there, you know, beyond the standard model that we have yet to discover.
Okay. All right.
Well, very interesting. That's what I do for a living. My day job is to work on something called string theory. And I'm the co-founder of string field theory. And we think that beyond the standard model, that is the quarks and the electrons and neutrinos, are vibrating strings. And that the subatomic particles are nothing but musical notes on this tiny vibrating string.
Professor, back up just a little bit. String theory. Can you give us a layman's explanation of what string theory is?
Well, first, go to my website, because I have articles on this. It's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We think that if you had a super microscope and can peer into the electron or a neutrino, you would just see a rubber band. A rubber band, and it vibrates in one way, and we call that an electron. You tweak it, and it turns into a neutrino. You tweak it again, it turns into a quark. You tweak it again, and it turns into the hundreds of subatomic particles that we have discovered so far. So musical notes, that's what we think neutrons and protons are, just different kinds of musical notes. So physics is basically the laws of harmony of these vibrating rubber bands. Chemistry is nothing but the melodies you can play on these vibrating strings. The universe is a symphony of strings. And the mind of God that Einstein wrote about eloquently for 30 years of his life, the mind of God is cosmic music resonating through 11-dimensional hyperspace. So we actually have a candidate for the mind of God.
So should I think of these strings like a harp? You know, parallel strings, parallel universes.
That's right. What you see around us is the lowest octave. But there's a higher octave, and the higher octave we think is dark matter. So what is dark matter, this invisible thing that holds the galaxy together? We think dark matter is nothing but a higher vibration of the string. So everything you see around you is basically the lowest vibration, and that's called the standard model. But beyond the standard model, the next set of vibrations we think is dark matter, and we think dark matter makes up most of the universe. So high school textbooks are wrong when they say the universe is mainly made out of atoms. Mm-hmm. Atoms only make up about 4% of the universe.
Are they going to change the books?
They are. Even as we speak, books are being rewritten to include the fact that atoms do not make up most of the universe. Atoms make up 4% of the universe. That's a standard model. But we now know that most of the universe is dark matter and dark energy.
I wonder what's going to happen when we pluck the string of dark matter.
Well, we hoped there was an announcement a few months ago that on the space station, they found a signature that might show the existence of dark matter. However, you know, that has to be verified and, you know, tested again. So there is some excitement that maybe we'll snag dark matter with the space station or maybe on some detector on the planet Earth. There's a big chase going on to try to find dark matter in cosmic rays. And so, you know, there could be dark matter in your living room. We're just too primitive to find it and detect it. But there could be dark matter in your living room right now.
Well, there is, unless my wife's turned it off and gone to bed. Let's see. Good morning. I guess it's morning where you are, and maybe it isn't. You're on Dark Matter with Art Bell and Professor Kaku.
Good morning, and QRZ, Art.
Hi there. That's a ham radio thing.
That's a ham radio thing. It's great to hear you back on this evening. We're a member of the fraternity and a member of the International Order of the Crazy. So if you know what that is, you've got one of the crazies on, and another one of my fire brothers told me you were back on, and I am thrilled to hear you back on. It's been great to hear you and listen to your first show back on tonight.
If I were to guess, you're in a truck, right?
No, sir. I'm in an RV.
Okay, in an RV. Yeah, that was close. All right, do you have a question for the professor?
Yes, I do.
Fire away.
One of my RV and ham buddies and I both have volunteered at Yellowstone, and Dr. Kaku mentioned that we can expect a big volcano eruption there at some time in the future, and since we go there quite often to do volunteer work in the open season, I wondered if he could give us any kind of tips of things to look for that might tip us off as to actions that might be an indicator that this is about to happen.
Okay, you're not like the crazy guy in 2012, are you?
No, sir, not today.
The radio broadcaster. Anyway, Professor.
Okay, well, first of all, when people think of Yellowstone, they think of Yogi Bear and the cartoons and stuff like that. Mm. But we have to realize that Yellowstone Park is at the tip, the very tip of a supervolcano. Most of it is underground. And it last erupted on the scale of hundreds of thousands of years ago. So the cycle time for these eruptions is measured in thousands of years. So, however, you know, according to one calculation, we are more or less due for another eruption. And when that happens, it could tear the guts out of the United States of America. Now, to look for telltale signs, it turns out that volcano eruptions do have warning signs, unlike earthquakes. Earthquakes can happen with very little warning.
Right.
However, with volcanoes, you have rumblings. You have stirrings within the volcano. Mm-hmm. And so with seismographs and with the different chemical detectors to look for different kinds of materials coming out of the volcano, you have telltale signs that something is happening, okay?
Something happening?
Well, right now, no. Just 2 years ago, there was some concern that maybe something was building up, but nothing came of that. But it is something that we have to monitor, because if you do fast forward the videotape, it will blow at some point. It's a law of physics that it will blow. And when that happens, it's not going to be pretty at all. But again, it could be tomorrow or it could be thousands of years in the future. The thing to do is to monitor it and to listen to it very carefully, to see the frequency of eruptions, the severity, because volcanoes, unlike earthquakes, do give you a warning.
If you thought that Yellowstone was going to go in a big way, what would you do?
Well, if the signs are there, politicians always say, don't cause panic, you know, you'll cause disruption. But if it really does look like Yellowstone is getting ready for another super eruption, I think
yes,
you should let the word out. People were going to have to evacuate. Look at Mount Vesuvius. The people there at Pompeii didn't have a chance. They had very little warning. And they were caught right there, you know, 2000.
Okay,
let's
put it this way. You're in New York, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Mm-hmm. So if Yellowstone went, would you be concerned in New York?
Well, definitely. First of all, the volcanic ash is going to go hundreds, thousands of miles. And, of course, there's going to be mass evacuations. People are going to spontaneously get on their SUV and get out of the path as fast as they can. And we're going to be affected all the way in New York, definitely.
Mm. I wouldn't be ideally situated here in Pahrump, Nevada, would I?
Well, it depends on which way the wind blows. but, yeah, there could be a lot of chaos in the very heartland of America.
I saw 2012. It was bad for Vegas.
Yeah, and it's not going to be good for the United States of America if Yellowstone goes up. But again, we don't know when. It may be thousands and thousands of years into the future, or maybe tomorrow. It's just one of these things we have to live with.
Okay. Hello there. Good evening. You're on the air with Art Bell and Professor Kaku. Dark matter it is.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I have a question for Dr. Kaku relative to the theory of relativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one time before on Art's show, you simply explained it, and I wondered how that relates to dark matter. and if it relates to dark matter. And also talking about Mars and the space program, I was at lunch last week in Washington, D.C., and I was sitting next to Buzz Aldrin. Mm-hmm. I think you had him on your show
right.
a long time ago, Art, and I asked him if he remembered that, and he says, yes, I do remember being on that show. But anyway, I'm a math major, but I've never understood the theory of relativity.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see what we can do here. Thank you very much for the call. Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Northern Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C.
All right. Very good. So, Professor, relativity, anything to do with dark matter?
Okay. First of all, the relativity and dark matter are not directly related to each other. Dark matter, we think, is a solution of relativity. But relativity makes different kinds of particles possible, plus two charge, minus two charge, plus one charge, different kinds of charges. Dark matter has zero charge. And as a consequence, we'll go right through ordinary matter, like a neutron. It's very difficult to stop a neutron because it has zero charge and doesn't interact electromagnetically with the rest of matter. So relativity makes possible dark matter, but it does not determine the characteristics of dark matter. And really,
explain, if you would, explain relativity.
Well, relativity violates common sense because we think that a second on the moon is a second on the Earth. We think right. that a yardstick on Jupiter is the same as a yardstick on the Earth. Relativity says no. Time beats faster on the moon than it does on the Earth. And our GPS satellites also are a little bit slower in their clock, and we can measure this. So relativity gives you a very precise way in which you can determine how time slows down as objects speed up and as they get heavier and as they get contracted. So when an object moves toward the speed of light, time slows down in that rocket ship, space contracts in that rocket ship, and mass increases. Mm-hmm. If you calculate the amount of mass that increases in that rocket ship, it is precisely E equals mc squared. In fact, that's how you derive E equals mc squared, because the energy of motion has turned into mass. And so the essence of relativity is that because the speed of light is a constant, it means that space and time change as you go to different points and as you accelerate.
All right, so if I can go fast enough, mm-hmm. I can time travel, in effect.
Yeah, we are all time travelers in the sense that we time travel into the future.
Right, as you go
toward the speed of light, of course, you can time travel much faster into the farther into the future. Going backwards in time, that would require a wormhole or some very advanced physics. But to go forwards in time, you can do that with special relativity.
Mm-hmm. All right, hold it right there. We'll take a break. And we'll come back with Professor Kaku and see how many more questions he's good for. This is Dark Matter.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and we'll be right back.
from the Area of 51. This is Dark Matter with Art Bell. To join the show, please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Speaking of the Area of 51, not very long ago, our government said, it's true, everybody. Area 51 is real. We now admit it. So I'm curious, Professor Kaku, when our government came out and said, yeah, it's real, we really do have an Area 51, were you, I don't know, I just laughed. I wonder how you reacted.
In the same way, this must have been the worst-kept secret of modern history.
At least.
Everybody knew about it. There were eyewitness accounts. There were maps. There were documents. This was a very badly kept secret, right? However, I think what is more important is what they didn't reveal. Now, obviously, every nation develops weapons at the cutting edge of what their technology will support. Every nation does that, right?
Right.
So, of course, I would be surprised if there wasn't an Area 51. Of course there's going to be an Area 51 to test these long-range bombers and stealth bombers and things like that. The real question is, how far are they advanced? And, of course, they're not going to reveal their crown jewels. They're going to reveal the crown jewels of the past decades. So I think that's a given. Common sense tells you that, A, it exists, B, that if they admit it exists, they're going to tell you the crown jewels of the past. The big question is, what do they have now that's cutting edge? And that, of course, is a matter of intense speculation.
Well, would you like to speculate?
Well, if you take a look at the direction of their technology, right, it's in the direction of creating things that are more and more invisible. And look at the U-2. It was so high up that only the Russians could launch a missile to take them out. The stealth bomber, right? However, true invisibility is actually possible. You have to use something called metamaterials, and metamaterials in the laboratory will make an object literally disappear under microwave radiation. Now they're trying to do it with visible light. That, of course, is much more difficult because the wavelength of light is so much smaller than microwaves. But it is within the laws of physics now, just like Harry Potter. We can't do it yet, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the military is spending, you know, billions trying to perfect metamaterials that can wrap light around Harry Potter, just like in the movies, so that literally you have an invisibility cloak. We don't have it yet.
Well, how do you know? I mean, if we did, we wouldn't know it because we couldn't see it.
Yeah, it'd be a game changer too, right? Can you imagine invisible soldiers, bombers? The stealth bomber is very visible. You just take a look at it, right? It's invisible to radar because it diffuses radar, and it has an airplane has a radar image of a bird. And so it looks, for all intents and purposes, like a bird on a radar screen, so you can still see it. But a true invisibility is physically possible. It's been demonstrated now at Duke University and other universities.
Then they must have it.
Well, I'm sure they're working on it. I'm sure they're spending billions trying to perfect true invisibility. And that's one thing I would suspect that they're working on in Area 51.
Well, that's very disappointing, if true, because it used to be you could go up by the mailbox not too far from me here and look at what they were thrusting into the air. Now, with invisibility, that's going to make viewing much less pleasurable.
Yes, that's right. And all you can look for is the exhaust of the rocket as it goes by.
Yeah, well, people will go look at that for sure. All right. By the way, how are you for time? Are you good to go, or do you need to go?
Yeah, maybe just one last question, and then I got to wrap it up.
All right. Here it comes. One last question. You're on the air. It's Dark Matter. Proceed.
Is it me?
Hello. Yes, you.
Mr. Bell, it's good to hear you back on the radio.
Oh.
I'm sitting on Highway 285 between Vaughan, New Mexico, heading to Roswell, New Mexico, on the side of the road, and I had to stop to make sure I didn't lose connection.
My God, I thought you were someone else. Welcome to the program, and if you have a question, fire away.
Well, you kind of answered it, but I've got another question with Dr. Kaku's comments about inserting images and false memories into people.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
With some of the things that have been going on, like some of the troops overseas and back over here that are involved in horrific incidents of killing
right.
people and walking into military bases, shooting people up and everything like that.
Yeah.
Can it be possible that the government in some way are doing something to these troops?
Okay. I've got it. Yeah, I've got it. In other words, in terms of injecting thoughts into people, I know exactly where he's going, Professor, and there are a lot of I call them head shakers going on, things that just simply don't make sense. People shooting people all over the place. It's the downside right now of the United States. And
right. Well, let me say two things. First of all, many, but not all, of these mass shootings are done by people that are mentally ill. And they deserve medical treatment. Unfortunately, our medical mental health system is decrepit and non-functional. Many
right.
of these people are just left wandering the streets, and some of them get guns and will take it out on people. Second, it is possible with animals now to inject simple memories, like sipping water, for example. We cannot go beyond that because we have to decipher what is called the hippocampus, which is at the very center of the brain, which processes
right.
memory. So doing things like an entire memory of an experience and putting it into a human, that is way beyond what we can do at the present time. So I don't think the government, even with its intents, can even come close to that. When in our most advanced laboratories at MIT and LA and other places, we can barely insert a simple memory into a mouse. So I think
right.
for the most part, we have these unfortunate incidences because we have a mental health system that is broken, and these people should be taken off the street, but instead they get access to guns, which I think is very unfortunate.
But something's changed, Professor. We've always in this country had access to guns. We just haven't used them as frequently as in recent years. So there's some other societal something that I haven't figured out yet going on. Professor, I want to thank you for being here as always.
Okay, my pleasure, really.
You're going to have people thinking about this for a long, long time,
and
particularly WR104.
Honor, real honor yeah. to be on your show.
Thank you, my friend, and good night.
Okay, good night.
All right, good night. All right, that's it. Professor Kaku has gone to rest, and I don't blame him. That was some pretty heady stuff, but I'm not gone. I'm not gone. And what I'm going to do is an hour of open lines. And that means unscreened open lines. Now, I will go through the remainder of the calls, and people will go, "Aw, I was on hold for Dr. Kaku." And then you can sort of project, if you wish, because I'll leave you on hold. And then after that, what's going to happen, now listen to me very carefully, because this is really important. When you call and I'm in open lines, it's going to ring for 20 rings. If you don't get through, then it's going to disconnect you and you have to dial again. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. And hopefully I will pick up your call. Just keep trying. You will get through. I can't promise that, but I think, you know, the effort will probably reward you with a connection eventually. In the meantime, let's do it. Good morning or evening, whatever it is, wherever you are, you're on the air. I'm Art Bell.
Hi, Art. This is Mike calling from Fresno, California.
Hey, Mike.
First of all, my radio is off.
Okay, thank you.
My late grandmother introduced me to your show back in the 90s and been listening ever since your retirements there. I was thrilled to hear you're coming back on the air, and I've been doing a countdown on Facebook every day till you get back on here. You're also the reason I got into ham radio and got my license.
Good for you.
I was gonna ask me Pascaco a question, but he's gone. I was just wondering about the suitcase nukes. If you really believe that all those Cold War nuclear materials have been destroyed, and if any of those out there could be turned into any type of small portable suitcase type weapons.
Okay, I'll sort of answer that. The answer is, no, they haven't all been destroyed. Yes, there are suitcase nukes out there. That's what he said. They do exist, and we need to fear them because one of them is enough to destroy an entire city. Boom, gone.
Yeah,
that's
not,
it.
Not good. All right, well, love that you're back on the air, Art. Great to talk to you. I tried to talk to you on the airwaves, but my little setup isn't quite powerful enough to get through the pileup whenever you're on. So, love hearing you, and 7-3, Art.
7-3, thank you. 7-3 is ham parlance for, you know, best wishes and see you later and all of that sort of thing. So when you hear people throwing that around, it means it's another ham operator out there of some sort. And hello, you are now on the air. This is Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell. Hello?
Maybe you're, hello, Art.
You don't, okay, there you are.
Sorry, I just wanted to say welcome back, 73, and I'm sorry I got it in the tail end, but it's a pleasure to talk with you.
I
was fortunate enough to work on the Ice Cube Neutrino Telescope at the South Pole for three seasons,
wow.
And one of the things that that Dr. Kaku was mentioning that was unfortunate about some of these cosmic events, which might give us a gamma ray burst, et cetera, or a supernova, that we would only find out about it after it was too late. One of the things that we were working on, I wrote software for the detector, was a background kind of neutrino function that would trigger and monitor a background noise kind of thing, looking for the background neutrino input, so to speak. And what they were looking for was a buildup of a neutrino stream. And this would happen in the early stages of the collapse of a star about to go supernova.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all the neutrino detectors around the world were linked. And that they had a network called the SNOOS network, including Ice Cube, which is a cubic kilometer embedded in the ice underneath the South Pole. But the idea was, is if you could detect this stream of neutrinos, then everybody could get this heads up and aim their telescopes and radio telescopes and optical telescopes at a particular place in the sky and measure this thing as it went off. And the question I had related to the first thing you started talking to about quantum entanglement. And so I it was curious, maybe if you had a chance to ask him at some point if it was possible to study the entanglement of particles. Because if you had one, for instance, that was captured in like the binary black hole system you were talking about, where one of the entangled particles escaped and the other stayed in the system,
yes,
or a stream of them, then perhaps you could study the escaped entangled particle faster than the speed of light and detect something that was going on, you know, way before it happened. So that was my question for Dr. Kaku, but I'll just throw it into the ether.
I'm not yet comfortable with the whole entanglement thing. I mean, it's like two things are close together, they learn about each other, and then no matter how far away you move them from each other, they act the same way, and they do so communicating at faster than the speed of light. I mean, I'm just not getting it yet. Are you?
No, I don't get it.
All right, I have one question for you. What's it like to work at the South Pole?
Oh, it's a marvelous experience. It's 11,500 feet barometrically, and it's a continuous thing. It's quite cold and dry, and you never can sleep quite enough. But the experience is
right.
Absolutely amazing, and the people are hearty, and you have to think on your feet, and you're never quite comfortable while you're there. And I wouldn't have traded it for anything. But when you come out of the South Pole, you go into Christchurch, New Zealand, which is just paradise. So
I'm sure compared to the South Pole, most things are. what was the biggest fear down there?
But getting injured, one of the guys, for instance, on the Ice Cube drill rigs, we drilled with hot water using car wash heaters at a 100 degrees C at 1,000 PSI. And one of the guys, a Swedish man, Sven, got hung up in one of the hoses, and the drill rig had gone into free fall. And you have to not grab a hold of things, and his reaction was to grab a hold of it. And he got pulled up onto the rig, and slammed against the top of the rig instead of free fall. Oh, thank God he didn't free fall into this, you know, meter diameter hole that went down 2.5 kilometers and into the ice.
That must have been some adventure. That's all I can say.
It was, but he slammed it. His lung collapsed. And then it was almost a week before he could get medical attention. And even though they had a doctor there, it was a harrowing experience. So safety was a big problem. And then I'll say one other thing is that it's very isolating. Even though it's an active station, when you're there, you really know that you're very, very remote from civilization. But they do have a ham station there, NPX.
Oh, they do. I know. I have spoken to them. I have talked to them. All right. Thank you very much for the call. Usually, on TV anyway, when a lung collapses, somebody whips out a ballpoint pen, unscrews the end, and goes into the guy, and you hear, shh, and he's been saved. Somehow I have a feeling there may be a little more to it than that. Good evening. I never know what to say. It depends on what part of the country you're in, but you're on the air on Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell.
How you doing, Art? This is Raphael from Colorado Springs.
Hello.
How you doing? It's good to hear you again. I've been listening to you since 94, and it's good to have you back. And I had a question for the professor, but with your vast knowledge and years of having so many guests, maybe you can answer my question, too.
Who knows?
Well, my question is with the WR-104 and the gamma rays, the gamma ray output when they both collide, do you think if hypothetically we had the time and the technology, do you think it would be possible to build a Dyson sphere in order to protect us from the gamma ray outburst?
That sounds, explain what that is.
Well, it's a Dyson sphere. It's like it was on an episode of Star Trek Next Generation years ago. Mm. And it was talking about how a civilization can enclose itself, enclose the solar system, and enclose a planet or a planet.
How about the dome?
Yes.
The
enclose
dome.
The entire planet, yeah.
You know what? Somehow, I just don't think there's going to be the time for that sort of thing. And certainly not the funding for it. You heard what he said about what Congress usually says to these scientists. You know, they chuckle. So there's nothing much funny about WR-104. I don't think there'd be that much time or that much money. So if you heard this was going to happen, just out of curiosity, what would you do?
Oh, I'll be taking myself and my family into the mountains with as much food as I possibly can.
Into the mountains, huh?
Well, inside, if I can get in. I mean, I'm over here.
Inside a mountain. Okay, I was going to say, on top of a mountain.
It depends how, you know, because we have NORAD over here, and who knows, they might open up the doors for the citizens of Colorado Springs and the surrounding areas, and we might be able to get in there.
Yeah, by the way, how are you doing weather-wise over there?
Oh, the rain has finally stopped. It just kept raining and raining and raining, and it finally stopped late this afternoon over here.
Good.
And I think everybody just took a cursory blink of two eyes and wondered when it's going to come next.
I understand. Well, hopefully everything will be okay. Some of the video coming out of that area has been unbelievable. And by the way, referencing only briefly the incident that occurred back in Washington, the shooting. I was watching CNN today, earlier today, as the news broke. And I really, really found it interesting. There was a medical news conference some hours after this occurred, and that the head of, I don't know, the hospital there was describing the condition of various people who had been brought to the hospital. And I don't know if any of the rest of you noticed this or not, and it was appropriate that CNN did it, but just as this lady had sort of finished up with the medical condition of the people, and she'd begun to talk about, you know, in our society, something has got to be done. There have been changes in our society, something that's bringing this sort of thing about. She didn't say all that, but she was headed down that road. And the moment she did, CNN yanked her off like yesterday's dream. I mean, really yanked her off. Just sort of Okay, on to the next show, and she's out of here. Maybe it was appropriate because she was speculating a little bit, but it's a question that really needs an answer. What's going on in our society? I'm Art Bell, and this is Dark Matter.
Strolling through the crowd like Peter Lorre contemplating a crime. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress, running like a watercolor in the rain.
XM, baby, and we're very serious. To call Art Bell, please manipulate your communication device and call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
I love that one. It's XM, baby, and we're really serious. Dark Matter. This is Dark Matter, and I'm Art Bell. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. I've still got a group of folks that are on hold that were at least screened for a question for the professor, and I'm going to take those calls before I move into the ones that are just ringing, reminding you that it will do that, ring for 20 times and then disconnect you. Not my fault, that's phone company stuff. The number is 1-855-REAL-UFO, 732-5836. And with that in mind, here we go. Anything's fair game. You're on the air. Good evening or morning or whatever.
Mr. Arthur William Bell III, it is so great to have you back on the air, sir. And I would like to say that William 6 Oscar Bravo Bravo's coming in loud and clear tonight.
Oh, good. Oh, good. You scared me. You know, the way people are coming at me, they're very enthusiastic, and for about 3 seconds, you almost sound like JC, and I'm going, uh-oh.
Well,
anyway, where are you calling from?
High Desert of Southern California.
Okay, excellent.
Gotcha. And wish you another great 68 here, and also many blessings to Aaron and Asia as well, your entire family there. A couple requests, and then to my point. Love to have you do another Antichrist caller line eventually. Love that one from back when. And also would love to see you do something on the Dark Knight that you posted on your website. That was incredible to read up on that, and would love to hear you do a show entirely on that.
You really think there is an Antichrist?
You know, I do believe that. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think there will be if there's not one now. But I'll tell you, the question that I have is, and I'm as we're listening on the air, I'm looking at an AP wire from last night that came in at 11:35 by two guys that work for the AP, the Daily Courier and ABC News. And that came in last night at 11:31. To your point, it is on the shooter that occurred this morning at 8:20 a.m. that they released last night on the AP. And I'm staring at both of these, scratching my head, trying to figure out how it is that this would be leaked on the AP before it actually occurred.
Well, all right. If you have a hard wire copy of that story, send it to me, and I'll take it from there. That's the only thing I can say to that. I'm not saying it is not so, because you are saying it's so. So the way to prove it is send me a copy of the Hardwire feed. I find it beyond all reason that it would be so, but, you know, you never know about these things. So if you have a – I've seen pretty weird stuff occur on the wires, so I'm not going to rule it out. I'm just going to say send it to me. We'll go from there. And you are now on the air on Dark Matter. Hello.
Hello, Art. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm thrilled to hear your voice on the air again, Art.
Thank you. Where are you, by the way?
I am on the campus of the University of Delaware.
Okay.
Well, my initial question I was going to ask Dr. Michio Kaku about your notion of the quickening from one of your books.
Yes.
The acceleration of time, but... I think
that was one of my books, The Quickening, and I would say that most of it has come true, and that we are still accelerating, and in not such a spiffy way, mind you. A lot of what's going on scares the hell out of me.
Baker Todd. Well, I was going to talk about that, Art, but I think. I don't know what Michio Kaku would have to say about that. I don't know in terms of accelerating time, if that's been looked at in physics. Are you aware of that at all? If that's been looked at in terms of complexity?
Hello? I have no idea. There may be that there may be an answer in mathematics somewhere or another. I don't know. But the quickening... The quickening was a kind of a concept that I had, that things were accelerating and accelerating beyond our control. And I think today was another example of it. I used to call them head shakers, but you've really got to admit earlier, Dr. Kaku said, well, you know, people are crazy. People have guns and they're crazy and they're doing this stuff. Well, people in the United States have always had guns. We haven't always been as crazy as we apparently are right now. Is this part of the quickening, that people are losing it more easily? Maybe it is. Certainly it's an accelerating phenomenon, and I don't know what to attribute it to. As you know, I lived for quite a number of years in the Philippines. And things are very, very different there. That's not to say that somebody may not pick your pocket, because it happens. It's not to say that there may not be some scam that goes on. It happens. But short of what goes on in the Southern Island, where there are virtual wars going on, other than that, in the rest of the nation, society is pretty much at rest. And by that I mean... very, very few murders, never a serial murderer that I'm aware of. All kinds of things are different. It's just a different society. And the things that are going on here that appear to be part of the quickening are not happening there. And you have to ask, why? What's the difference? I think it's worth a fair amount of study to find out why in some societies, and Japan is another example, although they don't particularly have guns there. Anyway, it's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. You're on the air on Dark Matter. Welcome.
Art, welcome back.
Thank you.
I renewed my XM subscription after 7 years just to listen to your show. I was, like you, I was wanting to ask Dr. Kaku about the entanglement of particles. Mm-hmm. That's just the brain killer there.
So, well, it is, and yet it's true, though. It's absolutely true. You know, those two particles, once they've met, will behave the same way every single time at any given distance. You know, what did Einstein call it? The exact quote is...
Spook spooky action at a distance is what
that's
he called
what he,
it.
That's right. That's right. And it sure is. That's spooky. It's so spooky that I don't think that science honestly can explain it at all. Not in a way I've understood.
Well, what I wonder is if they've ever had any experimental data showing that if you affect, like, the spin of one entangled particle, it affects the other.
Well, I guess if you, if you were, let's say you slowed down particle A, particle B would slow down in a perfectly identical manner.
Exactly. That's kind of what I wondered. Or change the upspin electron to a downspin, if the other one would automatically go to an upspin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what to say. That's right. And to explain how that's occurring, I just don't think you can. And I know I took him out of his comfort zone when I started talking about twins, but it's the truth, isn't it? If those two particles can act the same way millions of miles apart, then it may well be that consciousness itself is a quantum thing.
Exactly. Well, I'm sorry I didn't get to ask him that. You know, listening to your show tonight, it sure reminds me back when I was over the road and everything. It sounds like Art is back.
Okay, well, I am. Thank you very much for the call, and take care. I guess SiriusXM is a very, very serious blessing. If you're an over-the-road trucker, being able to sit, you know, just remain on one station all the way from Boston to L.A., that's got to be nice. I remember the old days of terrestrial radio and the big 50 kW stations, when they were there, would fade in and out and fade in and out, and you'd have to sort of switch from one to the other. And now, with satellite radio, Boston to L.A., no problem. Seattle to Miami, no problem. Amazing stuff. By the way, if you get the opportunity, go to artbell.com. You've really got to do this. And click on the How to Listen. And when you do, you're going to see a little moving GIF, I think it is, of exactly how the Sirius satellites are deployed, I guess would be the right word. And they go all the way up into southern Canada and then do a kind of a broad figure eight going down, near as I can see, all the way down to the South Pole, and then back up again. Now, the ones that loiter over southern Canada, they do the actual broadcasting. And so they take turns broadcasting. It's an amazing, amazing thing. The Soviets actually invented the orbit. Just incredible. Hello there. You're on Dark Matter with Art Bell.
Hi, Art. This is Carl from Wisconsin.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
You were missed.
I miss being here.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was going to ask Dr. Kattu about this. Maybe you know the answer. I thought Chernobyl was sealed up and safe, but it sounded like what he said, it was still an ongoing problem.
It has a sarcophagus over it and lots of cement. But it is not safe, and it's not going to be safe for a lot of years.
Yeah, well, I know it's you can't exactly go inside it anyway.
No, you're not even really safe outside of it. There have been stories of leaks and all kinds of things.
Oh, okay.
So, no, not safe.
Yeah, because that's what I thought. I thought they had sealed it up. I knew the area around it was still dangerous, but... And, of course, what's inside was dangerous, but it sounds like the thing is almost in a way still a time bomb.
It is a time bomb, and not in the way you think of a time bomb. You think of a time bomb essentially going off, right? Well, this bomb is capable of going off or of leaking, of poisoning our planet for, I don't know how long, thousands of years? I would suppose thousands of years, and now we have Japan to worry about, Fukushima. And I do worry. You know, I understand that TEPCO is not telling us everything. I worry that there are some very serious things that TEPCO has not told us. I worry about the effect the water that is washing over these reactor cores, and that's what they're doing, to keep them cool, try to keep them from, you know, heading for, well, I guess it's on the other side of the world, so they'd be headed for this side of the world, wouldn't they? The China syndrome. Backwards. Well, that's almost us, huh? You're on the air. Hello there.
Art, it is an unbelievable pleasure to be on your first show back. Welcome to SiriusXM.
Well, thank you. I've got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
When I press the button, is there a little noise that is made so you know you're on the air?
Yes, there is. It's a little it's a little static.
A little static?
Yeah,
okay.
It's like a little static and a ping, kind of, and you know you're on.
Static and a ping. Okay, that's what people can look for. Thank you.
Right. Otherwise, you're just sitting there thinking that when you say hello, is it me? No, but it's not.
Gotcha.
Well, Art, I mean, I started following you on Facebook before you made your announcement, so I guess Facebook has a lot to do with this gig that you have now, so it's pretty awesome.
Well, in the sense that Jeremy Coleman found me on Facebook and paid $5 to send me a message.
Yeah.
So in that,
cool.
In that sense, that's right.
Exactly.
Facebook is the reason I'm here.
A few things I wanted to kind of go over with you since you seem to be very open. I just kind of would like to kind of get your – you've talked about George a little bit on Facebook, and, I mean, are you at odds with him, or is it all Premier?
No, I'm not at odds with him. It's, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of what anger I had, it was all Premier. You know, George did something that disappointed me, but, you know, that's small potatoes.
And do you think that was because of the show? With what happened about a week or so ago?
I think he's the one who says there's no such thing as coincidences.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it there.
Okay, got you.
Okay.
Well, since you've been gone, there, a few things have happened, and you just mentioned one with Fukushima. But I'd be very curious to what your opinion is on Sandy Hook.
My opinion on Sandy Hook?
Well,
my opinion on Sandy Hook, my friend, is the same as it is on each and every one of these things that occurs. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. There is something profoundly wrong in our country. I don't know what it is. Maybe together we can figure it out. I don't know. But I do know that something basic and profound is wrong in the country. Let me say it one more time. We've always had guns. This country was founded with guns in the hands of just about everybody. There are perhaps rational uses for guns, right? What we're seeing now are irrational uses of guns. What is it in people and society that's causing the irrational use of guns? Not about to get into any kind of gun debate, no thank you. But we should work on that. You know, what is it that's causing this? All right, we're going to start answering calls cold now. Like this one, for example, you're on the air on Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell. Hi.
Art, great to hear you again. I am so happy that you're back.
Okay, well, we're now in unscreened territory. You tell them. Did anybody screen your call?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Where are you, by the way?
I'm in Spokane, Washington.
Excellent. Welcome.
And thank you very much. And you, the sound. Now, Art, I'm somebody who didn't know about you when you were on Coast.
Okay.
So my experience with you has been listening to your reruns every single night, 7 nights a week, for about the last 3.5 years.
Wow.
Finding you on internet radio. I've got a squeeze box in my bedroom that I go to sleep listening to you every night. So now
none of this has caused you to contemplate the irrational use of a gun, has it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely
good.
Not.
Good.
The sound difference between the AM side and XM is dramatic.
Oh, I bet it is.
It sounds so good, and that makes me also want to know what kind of a microphone you're using.
Beyer.
I always use a Beyer
mic. They're German, and love them.
And are you processing in the studio there, or
a little bit? A little bit, very lightly.
Gotcha. Well, you sound great. I'm so happy to hear you back.
Well, thank you, and it's very kind of you to call. Do it again.
All right. Thanks, Art.
Take care. Unscreened open lines, and you are now on the air on Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell. Hi.
Hi. How are you tonight, Art?
Just spiffy.
That's great. I'll tell you, it's been a long time coming. I guess it's been about, 2 million miles since I started listening to you, one of the over-the-road drivers, and just wanted to call and say, hey, great to have you back.
That's 2 million miles, huh?
Well, it's substantially more than that. That's when I started listening to you, was back in about 95.
That's a lot of miles.
That's a lot of miles. I'm well past the 3 million mile mark and still going strong at 55 years old.
That's really something. I often thought, thank you, when I was, I don't know what's the right word, younger, I guess that's the right word, that I'd love to be an over-the-road trucker. Absolutely would love it. I mean, just being out there with your own thoughts and radio and whatever, I think it'd be cool.
Well, it's a different type of a lifestyle, that's for sure, but it's, the miles go by a lot quicker with they like you to listen to. And then, tonight's first show, couldn't have chosen a better guest. Dr. Kaku is just one of the best I think you've ever had.
All right. Thank you so very much, and take care. Yes. Okay. So he's a trucker, and I'm well aware that we are talking to a lot of truckers out there. And I did contemplate that career. I really did. I thought it'd be really cool. For one thing, to be in command of something that big, moving that fast, and then having those quiet moments on the road with just your own thoughts, and as I mentioned, the radio, I don't know, something kind of romantic about it. Hi, you're on the air. This is Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell.
Hey there, Art.
Hello.
Hi there. I was wondering, are you going to be doing the ghost-to-ghost but XM Serious Dark Matter style?
You better believe it. I don't know what I'm going to do just yet, but the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Well, you are a celestial, let me tell you.
I don't know about that, but I will be one day.
Thank you, Art.
All right, take care. Will I do Ghost to Ghost? Not so-called. Just as I don't call, and by the way, I'm really sorry. A million of you have sent me messages, and it's kind of hard to track. I'm having to concentrate very hard on what I'm doing, seeing as this is my first show in a while. And so I've not paid as much attention to the wormhole as I should have. But I'm getting a lot of very, good messages there. Congratulatory, and thank you very much. I will try and pay more attention to it. The wormhole is at artbell.com. Feel free to take, run over there, type in a message. It'll go in Arizona and out the other side of the wormhole right here on my trusty computer. And I will, as I mentioned, try and pay more attention. Sorry. Well, hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Kirby up in Lewistown, Montana. How are you tonight?
I'm well, Kirby. What's on your mind?
It is so nice to hear you on the air. I have missed you so much, you just don't even know it.
Thank you.
Are you going... Is there any way that we can record shows on this? Are you going to set up some kind of a service where we can do it like they do on Brand X Show, or you can buy some sort of a subscription so we can download the things and listen to them the next day?
Well, I know that you can actually do that. In other words, as far as I know, you're able to join SiriusXM, and the old hands at it here will let me know, but I think you can join either to listen to SiriusXM in your car, in your home with the right receiver, or you can listen on your phone. For example, I've got it on my iPhone, no problem. And you can listen to it on your computer. Now, of course, you could record on any of those devices and play it back. I think, in fact, if you've got the right receiver, it even offers a rewind. so that you can rewind an hour or two and play it. There's just all kinds of things available. Now, is there on demand? I don't know. I'm sure that SiriusXM will provide me with the answer to that, but I would imagine there's some kind of, you know, on demand, or there will be if there isn't yet. That's the best answer I can give you. And you are now on the air on Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, just fine, sir.
Hey, welcome back.
Thank you. Everybody's going to say that, so.
Everyone's going to say that, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like being, do you like what you do?
I love what I do. I love what I do.
You're good at it.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. You know, I sweat it. I worried that I couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, you're doing it. You're doing it. And that was a great gift. That was a great gift. I love
Thank
that
you.
Gift. You know,
yep,
I wanted to ask him a question. I wanted to ask him a question. This is important about H3 as an energy source. Helium-3.
Helium-3, huh? I understand there's quite a bit of H3 on the moon, isn't there?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's one good reason to go to the moon, but apparently we're going to bypass it.
Oh, we should. We should get H3 and use that as an energy source, I think.
Well, we need something, that's for sure.
That's for sure. I almost met you in Las Vegas once.
You almost met me?
You were sitting 8 feet from me, but I was having such a good night, I went on a real run. And I ran out of there with my money. That half an hour later, I was like, oh, I was going to talk to him.
So you were on a bender in Vegas, and I see. Well, I've always enjoyed meeting people. I don't get out that much, but I've always enjoyed meeting people and meeting listeners. It's quite an experience, let me tell you. And hello there. You're on the air on Dark Matter with Art Bell.
Art, it's such a pleasure to speak to you. I've been a fan since the early 90s.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Tennessee right now. But
Tennessee.
I was listening to you in L.A.
Okay.
And I moved around a lot. But there's something that you used to do with the backward speech guy.
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
Yes.
But there was a falling out or something that you had with him, and
that is correct.
Is it something you want to talk about, or?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I asked him not to play metaphors, and he played metaphors. And I asked him not to play metaphors, and he played metaphors. And so I said bye.
Oh, because I had that. I thought that had something to do with the situation you mentioned at the top of the show.
Oh, well, it all got mixed up together, if that's what you're saying, eventually. But that's really all I have to say about it. You asked what was the catalyst, be the right word.
Oh, okay. Is there any plans of doing anything with the backward speech, or is that something from the past?
If another person comes along who's really good at it, I'll put them on the air.
Okay, and I'm a friend of yours on Facebook. I got in there just at the right time. I love you, and I'm so glad that you're on the air. I called
right.
Sirius about 5 times today to make sure you were premiering tonight.
They took care of you okay?
They did. They did.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, yesterday they told me you were going to be on at 6:15. They told me 9:15.
Really?
It was a little crazy. But I finally got somebody who understood who Art Bell was. And
My
said,
goodness.
Yes.
And, you know, in what time zone in the world do I come on at 6:15 or 9:15? It's always difficult to be on the hour.
It didn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense to you either. All right. Listen, thank you very much. We've got to take a break here. A very short one. We'll be back. A couple of breaks an hour. More content. More stuff to really talk about. I'm Art Bell.
Travel the world and the seven.
from the area of 51. This is Dark Matter with Art Bell. To join the show, please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
We are doing unscreened open lines, which means exactly what it sounds like. They're just ringing, and I'm just picking them up like this. You're on the air. This is Dark Matter.
Oh,
hi.
Oh, my God.
No, just Art Bell.
This is Art Bell?
It is.
Oh, my gosh. Art Bell, don't ever do that to us again.
Well, I hope I adequately explained it to you in the beginning.
Well, I honestly have to tell you, I missed the first 12 minutes, so I think I probably missed the explanation, but I'm going to tell you, I'm so happy to have you back on the air. I don't care.
Well, thank you.
I felt like
I'm going to tell you
left at the altar.
If you'll listen as we end up the show coming up shortly, I mean, you're right on the tail end of it here, it will repeat in its entirety.
Oh, I'm so grateful. I'm just so happy to have you back, and don't you ever do that to me again.
I'll try not to. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate you.
All right. Very kind of you. Take care and good morning or evening. I think it's morning back there. Hi there. You're on the air. Strike Matter.
Hi. This is John calling from New York, Long Island, New York.
Hey, John. How you doing?
How you doing, sir? I'm actually a first-time listener. And,
okay. Well, that's okay because I'm almost like a first-time host. Not quite. Almost.
No, your reputation precedes you. You're well-known.
A little bit.
I did have a question for the professor earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Both the gentlemen were speaking about the lull in the solar activity.
I was complaining about it, to be honest. A lull is putting it mildly. You know, we've almost got a spotless sun up there. It's not entirely true. There's maybe two little tiny spots, and I think the solar flux index is like 95 or 6 or something awful like that.
Yes, and I've been watching some of that, and I came across some interesting information about that subject, in that the sun, in a sense, is protecting us, the Earth, when it's more active. But being that it's less active now, there are more cosmic rays entering towards the Earth, and some have speculated that it's not only causing more cloud formation, but a cooling effect on the Earth, which you also mentioned. So,
well, I didn't exactly. What I said was that there is a report out right now saying that the global warming that they were talking about is not occurring at the pace they talked about. That might be due. You know, if you're one of those people who believes that solar activity relates to weather here on Earth, then you might be onto something.
Yes, yes. That's exactly what I found recently online. I'm not going to plug the website. That would be rude of me. But if you do have a show on the sun, hopefully soon, could you please discuss this with your guests if it comes up as far as cosmic rays coming from
the Earth? Listen, if you want to plug a website, go ahead. I don't care.
All right. It's offhand. I can't remember the damn thing.
Oh.
But,
okay. Well, then don't plug it.
But please do a show on the sun. That would be great. I'm sure a lot of listeners would love to hear more about that.
Well, do you follow it? And you've got to admit that what we've got going on right now is just crazy. And they're talking about the next cycle being even less than this one, which would be sort of nothing.
Oh, wow. And there was one other thing that this could create a situation as far as the thickness of the atmosphere. So there's two possible problems. One, cloud formation due to the allowing of some more cosmic rays hitting the Earth. And which would cool the Earth if there's more clouds, obviously. And then this other thing with it's slipped my mind again. I'm just a little nervous.
Okay, well, just, you know, relax.
Yeah.
Us. Yeah.
All right, sir, I want to thank you for coming on the air.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Fans are very happy about that.
Okay, well, you just experienced an unscreened but somewhat nervous call, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Good night. Take care. And yes, the solar situation is really, really interesting. I mean, it's really interesting. So all I can say is study about it a little bit. It's worth study. Listen, that's it. I don't know what happened to our time, but I definitely wanted to get this music in.
Midnight in the desert.
You know who that is, right?
Shooting stars across the sky.
This is Crystal Gayle, and this is how we close the show.
This magical journey will take us on a ride.
What a sweetheart. She gave this to me, came out to Nevada, and actually handed me the song and said, Art, this is for you. We'll do this again tomorrow night. Until then, I see that I've survived it. Good night, everybody, and thank you for being here.
Are we lost our intuition? Are we running out of time?